This holiday season, the Comics Podcast Network is proud to partner with the Hero Initiative to sponsor the Heroes for the Holidays Fund Drive. The Hero Initiative creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who may need emergency medical aid, financial support for the essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. Hero gives all comic fans the ability to thank and support the wonderful comic writers, pencilers, inkers, colorists, and letterers who have created some of our favorite comic book stories. The Comic Podcast Network encourages our listeners and fellow comic book fans to remember the Hero Initiative during this holiday season and to consider making a donation to this organization. You can be a hero for the holidays by visiting www.comicspodcast.com/hero to find out how to donate to the Hero Initiative, or you can go directly to Hero by visiting www.heroinitiative.org for more information on this great organization. Thank you and have a wonderful holiday season.
Welcome to episode 53 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levitsine, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Can he swing from a web? Yes, he can. He's Spider-Man. Join Jen Capelli, Chris Gallo, Brent Messina, and myself as we go in-depth on the life and times of Spider-Man. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 53 of Comic Timing. We're past that magic 52 number, and we're ready to go with a all-Spider-Man, all-the-time episode. Let me introduce the co-host first. The co-host, not co-host, co-host, but according to him, that cancels out the co-host. It's Brent Messina.
Well, actually, according to you now, it's just co-host.
Yeah, right. Fine, it's co-host. But it's so much more fun to say co-host, not co-host, co-host.
It's not fun to listen to.
Oh, really?
At least from my end.
Oh, from your end. Yeah, let's actually poll the listeners here. Hey, listeners, get back to us. Let us know. We're also joined for the first time since Geek Speak. So it's been that frickin' long. Webheb on the forums has returned here, and it is Chris Gallo. What's up, Chris?
Oh, not much, Ian. Hey, Brent, how you doing?
Doing good.
And also joined by the co-host of the Amazing Spider-Cast, and that is Jen Capelli, all the way from Canada. What's up, Jen?
Hello.
Hello.
It's about time to do some podcasting.
you're just getting it out of the way now, right?
Yeah, I'm just going to throw it out there.
Throw it out.
My apparent accent that doesn't exist to me, but everybody else catches it.
Well, I mean, everybody says I have a Brooklyn accent, but I'm like, eh, what are you talking about? Forget about it.
Exactly.
All right, so in this episode, we're doing the life and times of Spider-Man. So we're doing a nice, long, arcing thing here, and I'll read you the post straight from the forums, and we'll get going after that. A side discussion in episode 50, part 2, has led me to want to discuss all things Spider-Man on the show. Peter Parker has gone through many a change since his introduction back in Amazing Fantasy. Deaths, resurrections, failed kidnap attempts, funerals, apartments, villains, reform villains going back once more to villains, clones. Did I mention clones? The list goes on and on. What was your favorite era of Spider-Man? Who is Peter Parker to you, and what draws you to him as a character? Is there anything you'd love to return to the character that you feel he has lost over the years? How about something you'd like to take away? What was your favorite Spider-Man costume? How important to the overall mythos is the Spider-Man supporting cast to you? Finally, who were your favorite writers and artists on Spider-Man, and what made them so special? With the end of One More Day looming and a brand new day on the horizon, it's Spider-Man time! And, of course, the end of One More Day is another, what, 7 or 8 months down the road here? I don't know. When's that last issue come out, depending on Joe Quesada? Whenever he feels like it, right?
That sounds about right. My guess was August at this rate.
Okay, cool. That'll work. So hopefully by next year we'll have an actual like response to that. But hey, I actually picked up Sensational today. Didn't get a chance to read it yet, but it did come out. So at least we can give him that much. But yeah, we'll start things off with Chris, since it's been forever since he's been on the show. So I guess we'll start with him first. What makes Spider-Man Spider-Man to you?
It's a lot of things. I'm sure you've heard this before. It's kind of the everyman quality of him. You know, he feels like a real person. He feels like he could be someone I know. You know, he has a lot of same qualities that of myself and other people I know. He's struggling from day to day trying to make ends meet. He's living a normal life, except for the fact that he's Spider-Man.
And that, I guess, does change somebody's life a lot.
But, you know, but like I said, in my favorite era, in the 70s with Spider-Man, you would see him fighting and worrying about things. You know, my God, my aunt's sick. I got to get here. I got to do this. Worry about making the rent. Worrying about his job. All the while, he's fighting Doc Ock. It's very interesting because we're all like that in some extent. You're at your job. You're at school. And you're not in that moment. You're worried about other things. You're in school and you're worrying about getting home to take care of this and that. You know, you got laundry to do, these things like that. The little things that crop up in your life. That's what makes him so unique. He's not a god like Thor or someone like that who, you know, all has to worry about where he gets his tanker mead or something like that. And even though he wins, he loses. And who hasn't been in that boat, you know, where you get something goes right, you know, like, oh my God, I did good here, and then suddenly something goes turns to crap in your life somewhere else.
Yeah. Sometimes I really wish I did actually have that outlet in life that allowed me to, you know, like beat up Doc Ock when I'm feeling pissed off. You know, like, because I'm sure that happens in Spider-Man's life all the time. Like, he has a really bad day and he gets a blow off steam by like beating up generic supervillain number 4.
Yes, exactly. That has happened a few times where he's had to been stopped. Like, what are you doing? Like, oh, shoot, sorry. Never mind. Call the cops, lady. I'm out of here.
Yeah, it's like, sorry, J. Jonah really pissed me off. Oh, oops, I can't say that. That'll give away my secret identity. On second thought, it was Bob from accounting. Jen, what makes Spider-Man Spider-Man to you?
Oh, man, how can I not agree with Mr. Gallo? Like, he's just this regular guy dropped into the superhero world. Even now, I was reading back in New Avengers, and he's still kind of got that real guy attitude where everyone else has that consistent go me, but he's still the one going, oh, I still have this to worry about, and hey, do you guys ever realize how silly you sound? He's kind of always that connection with the reader that's, it's not quite the breaking the fourth wall, but it's the knowing that his situation is a lot different from Tony Stark's.
Right.
You know, he's not the rich guy. He's not the guy getting all the chicks. He did get his wife, of course, but there's always problems. Like, when is that gal not in peril? When is, you know, when is Joe Quesada breaking them up? you know, like, there's always something, though, coming back to exactly what Chris said, there's always something pulling him back into that real world. You know, he's not in space every other issue with the Shi'ar. He's not running around in Asgard. He's in New York beating up that mugger that's trying to take that lady's purse.
Yeah.
You know, like, that was always the plus for me.
I'm sort of imagining, like, once Joe Quesada's gone, that, like, an angry creator is going to create, like, a supervillain named, like, Quo Jesada, who's, like, really trying to ruin Spider-Man's life and, like, change everything, change the status quo, because, and his, like, catchline will be something like, I like it better this way!
Oh, don't give him ideas. Don't.
Uh-oh, look out. Brent, what makes Spider-Man Spider-Man to you?
What makes Spider-Man to me is his guilt. You know, the amount of guilt and responsibility he has for other people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's unique to that character. I don't think there's any character out there that has as much guilt and feels so responsible for everything that happens around him than Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And that makes him really relatable because we as humans have guilt, whereas sometimes Batman and Superman don't think that they have it or it doesn't feel like they do.
Well, I guess most specifically it's a different kind of guilt than my parents are dead. Yeah, it's like he still manages to be optimistic about things even when things go bad for him, while the minute things go bad for Batman, all he does is brood.
One-liners and stuff, right? Like the jokes
right.
and dialogue alone is what sets him apart from pretty much every hero from his time.
Oh, yeah.
And then he always uses that guilt he turns it into almost like self-sacrifice. You know, he's willing to lose everything to make somebody else's life better. And that's really noble, you know. Whereas, you know, if you just wallow in guilt, he could just easily be one of those melodramatic, whiny characters. But instead of, he uses that guilt. He's like, he's willing to take that risk, go one step farther. I mean, to lose everything to help a total stranger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it is kind of what makes somebody a hero. You know, you got to have at least something that gets you to that point. And I don't think anybody's really had in the superhero universe as much of a reason to become a hero than Spider-Man has. I mean, he lost his parents at a young age. He barely even remembers them. He had this loving aunt and a loving uncle, and the uncle was taken away from him. And it proved to him that literally, with great power comes great responsibility. I mean, that's the most overused quote in Spider-Man, and yet that is the essence of the character right there, because he learned the hard way that if you don't take action when, you know, people do something that they really shouldn't, and, you know, try and, like, I guess, like, get them to pay for it, you're going to ruin things not only for yourself but other people.
He's managed to do, quote-unquote, the right thing 99% of the time, and he still feels guilty and thinks he's made every wrong mistake in the world.
Right.
Yeah. That's absolutely incredible. Like, and it makes an excellent kind of, not emo character, but he rises above all that and kind of creates, as you said, you know, because his uncle's death was his own fault, technically it's not just him embellishing on the fact, he could have stopped that guy from killing his uncle.
Yeah, it's not like in, like, Batman where, you know, Bruce says, oh, I could have stopped them, but he was a kid.
He's like five or whatever. I don't know how old he actually is.
Yeah. Another thing I just thought of was the fact that, like most of us, Peter Parker didn't have the most idyllic childhood. Like you mentioned, parents died at an early age. You know, we've all had our ups and downs, and we all kind of wish that if we could be the superhero type character, our life would be so much better. And Peter Parker proves that's not true. Mm-hmm. He got our geek wish of, you know, getting that power to do whatever he pretty much wants to, and his life still sucks.
Yeah. I mean, he does have some happy moments in his life, but it never seemed to last very long.
No.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I mean, especially over the years. Like, I mean, if you look at every era of Spider-Man since he was created to now, there's always been a turning point where, like, even if he has that moment of, like, happiness, like, you know, he gets a new apartment, then somebody smashes the apartment. He gets a new roommate. The roommate turns out to be evil. you know, or he gets...
I hate when that happens.
I know. Tell me about it. It happens way too often to me, you know. Well, wait, I still live with my parents in a very small room. On second thought, never mind. Yeah, it's just like, there's always something to off-put that smile on his face, and yet he still manages to have the smile.
It's true.
Since Chris already mentioned that the 70s were his favorite era of Spider-Man, what was it that drew you to the 70s era of Spider-Man, Chris?
Pretty much that's when I got into it. When I was young, that's when I started picking up to it, but... It was a good balance, looking back at it, of a fun. You know, the character was still a bit lighthearted, but there was a lot of serious moments. And, of course, we all know there was a lot of things went down, Clone Era, Saga, and stuff like that. But he was still growing as a person. He was just in college, so he's gotten past that high school awkward age, but he hadn't quite graduated and become a man and all that kind of stuff like that. Mm-hmm. He still had a lot of the same lighthearted problems, you know, like getting a date and making bills. One of my favorite scenes in one of the issues, I remember it was just really funny. He had to go save the day and he had to jump, you know, he was on a penthouse and he leapt to a helicopter and he had to change in Spider-Man from the street clothes. And he leapt without thinking. Suddenly he realizes, well, what the hell am I supposed to do with my clothes? And he had to literally throw them away. He goes, well, there goes my favorite shirt, you know, things like that. I mean, there was enough lighthearted moments like that that made you laugh and smile in between all the seriousness. It was just a good time. I mean, it was a different era in comics altogether. It was a lot of, you know, it wasn't that dark and gritty 80s that everybody seemed to hit at one point, you know, after Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. So it was just that way. It was just a fun time. You know, it had enough. It had the serious moments, but it also had that fun stuff.
And I guess this was before he started making, like, web backpacks to keep his clothes in.
Well, he still did that, but it was like suddenly he's hanging from a helicopter by a web line. So he's, in one hand, is holding himself up. And the other hand, he's like, what do I do? Well, there goes my pants. There goes my wallet. There goes my favorite shirt that I only got to wear once, you know, things like that.
I'm kind of glad that he had the spider outfit, though, because I'd hate for him to, like, lose his pants and have nothing to put on afterwards.
Yeah, there was a lot of moments like that in the books. There was another moment where he stashed his clothes and on a rooftop, and it was dead of winter in New York, and the pipe burst and water poured all over his clothes and it froze his clothes solid. Mm-hmm. Another time, so he's like, okay, well, I'm never gonna let that happen again. I'll find this, oh look, a nice warm air vent, and he put his clothes in there. What happens? The air vent led to a delicatessen, so his clothes smelled like cold cuts. Stuff like that. It was just silly fun stuff, and they were just thrown in, sprinkled in here and there. It was hilarious.
I smell corned beef.
Yeah, it's exactly. What are you going to do? I mean, you know, that would be something that would happen to me. You know, like if I was some superhero, oh, hey, look, oh, be such a smart guy. I put my clothes in this nice warm vent, so I'll have toasty clothes when I get back. And then, oh, great, now they smell like bologna. You know, great.
Yeah, that's a problem that I guess a lot of superheroes run into every now and then. Now, yeah. Jen, Brent, and I think all share the, I guess, the displeasure to some, but the pleasure to us of starting Spider-Man in the 90s, pretty much.
Yep.
I guess I'll start with Brent first. I know that you were exposed to Spider-Man in the 90s, but is the 90s your favorite era of Spider-Man?
No, my favorite era is the current era. I was exposed to Spider-Man, I guess, through the cartoon mostly, where he was, you know, in college at ESU and stuff like that. But the most Spider-Man comics I've read is the current Straczynski run. I love the first trade of that. I read that and I was hooked. Like, this was amazing. And Peter Parker had these awesome one-liners, and John Romita Jr. on art just couldn't beat it. And then Ultimate Spider-Man, I read that when it first came out. Marvel had this digital comics online thing, mm-hmm. similar to what they have now, except it was all free.
Yeah.
With the launch of the Ultimate line, they put all the Ultimate books up there. So I read the first 20 issues of like Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimate X-Men on there. So I got to read them that way for free, and it was an awesome read. And I'm keeping up with Ultimate Spider-Man on occasion. Like, I pick up, you know, the big arcs. I got the Clone Saga. I got the Venom Saga, the Carnage one, the one where it crossed over with Ultimate, stuff like that. So I'm just keeping up that way, and I'm really loving what's going on in the Spider-Man verse, except for One More Day. Except for One More Day. And I love the way he's being written in New Avengers. I love that scene in the first arc where he's like, oh yeah, well, I got clones. I love that. Yeah. I just love the way Bendis writes his wisecracks. It just cracks me up every time.
Yeah, well, you made a good point with the Ultimate Spider-Man stuff, that was some of the best Spider-Man that we got, like, in a long time. And it sort of proved to me also that Bendis should always write Spider-Man in one form or another. He gets the character so well, both the regular, like, Marvel U Spider-Man and the Ultimate Spider-Man. He has that perfect quality to him that so few writers manage to get with Spider-Man.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
No, I agree.
For sure.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, I just wanted to totally agree. I just read the entire run of New Avengers myself. Mm-hmm. I kind of didn't really, was never a big Avenger fan, but because Spidey was in the group, I agree 100% with some of the best Spidey writing I've seen in a long time. Mm-hmm. Dialogue, character, everything, hands down. The Clones cracks, there's about, I think, two or three of those in the whole run.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Well, how about the guy love between Luke Cage and Spider-Man?
Oh, man.
I mean, those two, they could be like a married couple sometimes.
Well, it brings back that whole kind of Ben Grimm torch quality back to a group of superheroes again. Or it's just, you know, it makes it. It kind of puts the balance to, you got Captain America up front being all Boy Scout, and it just puts that great balance in there to give it some humor as well.
Yeah.
The Skrull stuff now. It's just fitting.
Yeah. And I actually really appreciate them going back and forth. But like, Spider-Man's like, oh, I'm definitely not a Skrull. Dude, you could be a Skrull. No, I'm not a Skrull, man. I swear I'm not a Skrull. That's good times. But yeah, Jen, same question I asked Brent, I'll ask to you. Growing up in the 90s, is that your favorite era or is it now?
It was for the longest time. I grew up a complete child of the Clone Saga, and I know I can just feel the people going, oh, right going out the window. But in all truth, I came in during that time, and I was a huge advocate for 90s Clone Saga for a lot of my life, and that's all I bought was, you know, that kind of Bagley era of amazing and whatnot, and which is a little sketchy on other people's records. But then as I started getting back into it in more modern times, I'm reading more and more of that Silver Age, Bronze Age stuff. And I have to say, his college years are starting to shape up to be some of my favorite stuff going on. Because we just read the first Clone Saga and reviewed it. And it was dang good. The bad guys introduced in that time. You got the Professor Warren. He's got a father figure again. Flash coming back and being mature in college and having gone to the war and just meeting Harry. And all in all, just that's where the character really blossomed for me.
I think I'm actually going to be the stalwart. I'm going to be the guy who says that the 90s is his favorite era because it was what got me into Spider-Man. And it's kind of hard to forget your first time. when you're reading in many ways. All right. I'm not meaning that the other way. It's just it's kind of hard to forget your first comic book that you read. The first Spider-Man comic that I remember picking up, and this is remember picking up because I did pick up other ones before that. But I remember first starting with that that Carrion arc. It was Carrion and I forget what the name of the other one was. Was it like Shriek or something like that?
Yep.
Where they were like spreading the Carrion virus and Spider-Man became more spider than man. You know, he was going through that whole...
The Shrieking. That was called The Shrieking and it was horrible.
Yeah. No, I know it was horrible. I know it was horrible. However, it was still the first thing I picked up.
It was right before that literally like stepped right into the Clone Saga. So yeah. You're only like a couple issues ahead.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
And I remember I missed the few first parts of the Clone Saga I missed, but the first one I definitely remember picking up from the Clone Saga was the first Scarlet Spider issue, where he gets his outfit. He's not even the one who named him Scarlet Spider. Other people were calling him that. He's like, all right, whatever, I'll be Scarlet Spider. And I remember that fight that he had with Venom.
Yes, Web 118 for the kids out there.
Yeah.
Issue.
That was so good. And it just, like, it proved so much to me. And then as I went on, like, I'm learning more about Peter, and I'm learning more about his life, and I'm like, okay, this is definitely something I can get into. And the animated series only exemplified that for me, because I had classic Spider-Man with the Spider-Man cartoon show, and I had current Spider-Man with the Clone Saga that was going on, and I was hooked. I picked up every single issue after that. For a very long time, I was picking up every single Spider-Man issue that came out, whether it was Web, whether it was Spectacular, whether it was Amazing, whether it was Super Mega Hyperman, whatever they want to call it, because there were like 17 different Spider-Man titles back then. It was crazy.
It was so bad at that time, especially in the Clone Saga. They literally had like unlimited, sensational, it was ridiculous. I can't believe you seriously wanted to get all those.
And around that also, I had like Spider-Man Year One, The Lost Years, I think it was. What was that? Spider-Man The Lost Years?
That was, Ben Reilly's backstory.
Yeah. And there was also, like, was it Untold Tales of Spider-Man? I think it was.
Yep.
Which was also exceptionally good. So I was getting like a mix of the classic and the regular, and that's why that's the era that really just still connects to me today. It's a sad thing to say that the most lauded arc in Spider-Man history to a lot of people is my favorite, but to this day it still is. I can't beat it. I'm sorry.
I've only read two issues of that Clone Saga, and one of them, both times when I read him, but I was like, what the hell is going on here? Because there's two Spider-Man. Both of them, they weren't like the Scarlet Spider. It was like when Peter quit being Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And Ben Reilly had like the now current Spider-Girl outfit with like the web stingers or whatever on his wrists.
Yeah.
One of them was when Ben Reilly, I don't know if it was Peter Parker. Anyway, one of the Spider-Man in the different Spider-Man outfit got captured by like the guy that runs Hydra or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And it's like John Romita Jr. artwork, and he breaks out, and Daredevil shows up in his like armor or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember one with some time traveling bearded dude that looked like the Mandarin, but they called him Scriver or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Traveler.
Traveler.
And there's some other dude in a hood.
Yeah. Oh,
there's some other dude with a full face mask holding a rose, and I was like, who the fuck are these guys? It's not the Kingpin or the Rhino or anything like that.
You're actually right about the guy holding the rose, because his name was actually the Rose.
Okay.
Yeah.
But what I did really like, I read one issue. What's his face? The guy who does Savage Dragon?
Eric Larson.
Eric Larson, yeah. He did like an issue with Spider-Man and Beast. Mm-hmm. And that was really cool.
Around that time, too, you had like Peter Parker lose his powers and get them back. And they thought he was dying of clone degeneration. But it turned out that he was just getting his powers back. And I remember that one issue where the Wizard showed up again. And you've got Peter Parker in hospital scrubs and like a hospital mask trying to use his spider powers. And Ben's just like going on like, dude, what the hell are you trying to do? I've got this. Like, no, don't worry about it. I got it. And then, of course, he falls off a building.
Got the best luck in the world, Peter Parker.
Yes, of course we can. We can laugh at Peter's misfortune because of just how often it happens, all right? But it's
well
like,
said.
It was hard for me to look away at that point, and I ate it up. The whole Revelations thing with with Norman coming back, it was great, but I got a different side of the Clone Saga when I actually read that Life of Riley, the column. I don't know if anybody else out on
the
panel
has read
that. Okay.
Yep.
that just changed my mind a little bit about the Clone Saga for a bit, but I got to understand it a little bit more. Like, the changes and the decisions that were made. Like, how, like, originally it was going to be, like, a time loop or something, and that Ben was going to be Spider-Man, but they were forced to change it, and all these decisions that were going on at Marvel at the time. You realize it was a very turmoil-filled time in Marvel, because, like, the editorial staff was changing, like, every other day.
Yeah, and it seemed like they were changing on the fly as they were going. It was a lot of these changes weren't thought out. They were just, no, we can't do that. Let's do this. And
really bad timing, too. Really bad timing. Yeah,
if they had stuck to their guns, it might have been something really good. I mean, it was shaping up to be really good, but they made those little changes here and there, and then dragging it out longer than they should have really killed that book.
Well, when they introduced the third Spider-Man, you know, Spider-Side.
Oh. Yep.
I banged my head up against the wall. I'm like, what the hell are you trying to do? Because I had just finished reading The Death of Superman in trade. That was actually the first trade I picked up, if I remember correctly, The Death of Superman. I was at, like, Walden Books at King's Plaza here in Brooklyn, and that was one of the first things I picked up. And I remember reading that, and I'm like, wow, there's a bunch of Supermen running around. I wonder which one could be the real one. Oh, it's the one with the mullet. And, you know, then I get to Spider-Man, and I'm like, hey, there's two Spider-Men running around. I wonder which one it would... Oh, there's a third one. What the hell?
Does he have a mullet?
No, but he did have really freaky arms.
It's true.
Is that the guy with
and
the
water
six
powers,
arms?
Apparently.
Yeah, no, Spider-Side was the one that, Jen, like, what was it? Like, he manipulate his arms and change him and stuff?
He kind of mutated him a little bit farther. Like, he was always... when he was first introduced as the third Peter Parker, when they all went to fight Kane, he started mutating, like, even more than everybody else.
Yeah.
And they started calling him the freak face guy because he just looked like Hyde. When he disappeared, he came back, and that's when they revealed to be the same. Spider-Side was indeed the guy that could mold his body all weird and... Mm-hmm. Do all these really freaky things, and it was the most ridiculous storyline ever. Like, they just did too much of that, stepping a little bit too far over the line.
Yeah,
they had just stopped it at smoke and mirrors, it would have been fine.
Oh yeah,
but they had to go with the spider side crap. They had to do the Trial of Peter Parker stuff with more Judas Traveler crap, and it got ridiculous.
Well, just like, I would have been perfectly happy if Peter had just stayed in Seattle, because he moved away, and they were out of the picture. It was Mary Jane and Peter out of the picture, so that Ben Reilly could live his life. And literally, what was it, 2 months after that, they're back in the Spider-Man books.
It was supposed to be like that. Ben was supposed to... the whole thing was supposed to end at 400 with Ben as Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, if I'm correct, after reading Life of Reilly.
You're right about that, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Why didn't they just do that?
I don't know.
It just boggles the mind. It's kind of like what's going on right now with the One More Days and stuff. Why?
I don't know.
Why?
Yeah, well, I think we're going to go back in time a little bit and just, like, start out and, like, work our way up a bit. I haven't read a lot of the original Ditko and, you know, Stan Lee stuff, but I have read, I guess, enough of it. Like, I've paged through a bunch of stuff in, like, trades and that sort of stuff and essentials, and the list goes on and on. That first era of Spider-Man did a great job of setting up the character. It's like he had this look that nobody else in comics had at the time, and that's... Obviously, that's Steve Ditko working right there. I mean, he did a wonderful job of giving him that appearance that, I guess, yeah, nobody else did. He looked like a kid. He looked like a kid in a man's world. And it just, I don't know, it's something that they never really captured again in Spider-Man to me. He's always sort of looked a bit older than that ever since Romita Sr. came on the scene. Chris, would you agree with that?
Yeah, he was a little bit more lankier back there, back in the early days with Ditko. You got to give it to Steve, though. He pretty much defined the character. I know there's always this big argument between who created Spider-Man, Stan Lee or Steve Ditko. I give it this way. Stan Lee created it, but Ditko pretty much defined the character. The way he drew him, the way he moved, you know, he's never looked the same. You could tell that he wasn't some big muscle-bound character. He looked... I don't know, for lack of better terms, almost just some lanky teenager. I mean, he didn't have that much definition in his body, but the way he moved, the way he drew the character was incredible.
Yeah.
And he really did define the character. And then, Remeter Sr. took over, and he started to ape his style for a while, but then he put his own twist on it. Mm-hmm. But he's gotten older, so I kind of chalk that up as here's a character that's actually progressing in age. He's not going to be that 15-year-old kid all his life.
Right.
You know, he's aging, so his body is changing, and it's never been anything dramatic. It's never been like you went from this to this, you know. So I've been able to ride it through all those changes, and I like it. I mean, but you're right. Ditko, it's never been been recaptured the way he did it.
Yeah. Brent, have you had a chance to actually look at any of those early Spider-Man issues?
No, I haven't. Just haven't got around to it.
Okay. What was the earliest era of Spider-Man that you've actually had a chance to look at?
Like a couple issues of the Clone Saga. Most of the classic stuff I've been exposed to was like the Spider-Man cartoon where they just copied everything from there.
Okay, that works, yeah. But mentioning that Spider-Man cartoon, though, how did that Spider-Man feel to you?
It felt really good, but a lot of times, like, it felt overly dramatic. You know, it was a heavy dose of drama and a little dose of Spider-Man to me sometimes, especially if you go back and watch it now.
This is the 90s one? Okay.
Like, every episode has the same background. I love that music, though, that beginning, the Spider-Man.
Aerosmith.
Yeah, there's like it's like a Guitar Hero slide down there, you know.
I believe it's the guitarist from Aerosmith that did it, but just the names escaped me for a second.
Joe Perry.
Yeah, there we go.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I liked the show, and then once they started getting into other things, I don't know. I liked the later seasons when they did like the Secret Wars episode, they did that. They did the multiple Spider-Man, which is like the series finale where they had like the armored spider guy and some other thing and stuff like that.
And you know, fans across the planet were just squealing when we saw Scarlet Spider and Spider and all various incarnations.
And of course, the guy who was just playing Spider-Man in the TV show.
Nice addition.
Yeah.
Good ending to that, too, with Stan Lee and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I still wish we would have saw more of that, because obviously they ended on such a cliffhanger there. And then I won't even talk about the series that shall not be named of Spider-Man Unlimited.
I was so going to go there,
too. That's the future one, right?
It was supposed to head it up, too. Can you imagine that they got rid of that 90s one?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I mentioned this to you guys on your forums and the Amazing Spider-Cast forums, but they were originally going to what Spider-Man Unlimited was, just to let Brent know and the other guys out there who don't. Spider-Man Unlimited was a series where Spider-Man goes to Counter-Earth. It's an Earth on the other side of the sun. And he gets to encounter all these, like, freaks and high evolutionary and all that. He gets a new outfit that's designed by Reed Richards, and he gets to battle, like, Carnage and Venom and all that. And he has other versions of – actually, a lot of good versions of characters that we already knew, like, as opposed to, like, villains, they'd be heroes, like Green Goblin and that sort of stuff. But it just never felt like Spider-Man to me. It was another show. They could have just called it, like, you know, like Bug Guy, and not have it be Spider-Man at all, and it would have been perfectly fine. Mm-hmm. But this was not Spider-Man to me because he's grounded. What I heard, though, in a book that I read, I forget which one it was, but it was one that was basically like the history of Spider-Man, that I might have actually been the history of Spider-Man on TV specifically, but they were going to bring him back to Earth in I think, like the third season or something like that. The season that would have corresponded with the Spider-Man movie. He would have ended up back on Earth, and it pretty much would have been what they did in the 90s Spider-Man series. It would have just been like a return to the good old days, as it were. But what I'm thinking to myself is, why the hell bother with that? Why not just keep him on Earth in the first place?
That's kind of what we were all saying.
Yeah. It's like they did a side story for no reason at all. It was just not necessary.
That's the one where he had the big bug eyes, the yellow eyes and stuff, and the weird cape-looking thing.
It was the Spider-Man 2099 outfit modded.
It was basically 2099. And I mean, why? To me, that was everything Spider-Man does not stand for.
Yeah.
It's, you know, not in space, none of that crap. It just completely throws it out the window. And I mean, not just does it badly, wrecks it.
Yeah.
It was almost like they were afraid to go off from what was going on in the books. Like, say, well, we can't use what's in the books anymore, so let's create a whole new world and do this. Instead of just trying to make their own original Spider-Man stories, they said, well, let's go this crazy route.
Right.
That way nobody can say anything.
Yeah,
except that it sucked.
I think it was actually something involving that they couldn't put anything that was not the Spider-Man movie on the air until the Spider-Man movie. Like, there was some sort of, like, because the rights were with the movie, they couldn't do, like, the full story, if I remember correctly. So that's another reason why it wasn't on there. But if that was the case, then I just say, don't show anything until the movie. Don't bother with a crazy story like this and just give us a new Spider-Man animated series when the movie comes out.
Yeah. And you know, what was the worst part about it for me was the whole premise, why he was there. It just made no sense. He just suddenly, I got to go save John Jameson.
Yeah.
And he hopped a spaceship and just went over. Like, there couldn't be somebody else who could have done this.
Yeah.
Like, real astronaut?
Yeah. Some one of those spacefaring heroes, you know. What's the Fantastic Four doing? They're just sitting around doing nothing.
John Glenn is Space Ranger on Counter-Earth.
Half tiger.
And the whole time he's pining away to get back, then why did you leave in the first place? You know, it made no sense. It wasn't, and there was no guilt involved.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the only one because I sent him there. No, you didn't have anything to do with it. Sometimes you need to step back and just say, you know what? Not my problem.
Yeah. Jen, what's the, I guess, the essential Spider-Man artist to you? I mean, I know I mentioned Ditko before, so if you want to mention, like, his style at all, you can. But which style are you drawn to most?
I got to go with what I grew up with, and it's the amazing 90s Bagley,
mm-hmm.
Mark Bagley. Like, it's just phenomenal. I'm not even a fan so much of his modern stuff, because it's just a little too skinny in Ultimate. I'm not a fan of his build and whatnot.
Yeah.
But, man, those 90s amazing issues were incredible.
Oh, yeah.
As a secondary, I got to go with the classic John Romita, because when I'm reading those issues, it's his stuff I seem to enjoy the most back then.
Now, is this classic as in his 80s stuff or his 90s stuff?
Romita Sr., sorry.
Oh, Romita Sr., okay.
Yep. Right. Yeah. I'm looking back at that really old stuff. That's who I like to look at.
Okay, cool. What is your take on the Ditko stuff? I mean, was that too different for you or what?
It was just too early in his evolution for me.
Okay.
The eyes are a little squinchy, you know, just kind of not what I, after seeing all the incarnations,
mm-hmm.
It's all about, you know, how Bagley had the eyes all big and the muscle definition that, you know, was with every 90s character that was ridiculously disproportionate.
Yeah.
But it just, for me, that's just where I'm at home. It's like the Clone Saga to the rest of us that grew up during that time.
You know what Ditko art reminds me of, actually? When I look at old, like, really, really old Superman stuff, and I see just how different he looked, that's the same feeling I get when I look at Ditko stuff, because it's almost like an entirely different character at times. The definition of the costume is different, the webs are different, the eyes are different, and it's I still see it as Spider-Man, but I see it almost as, like, detached from what I know.
Well, there's actually figures being released. I believe they did Mini-Mates recently, where there's a couple special editions.
Yeah.
And it's so different that they actually released a Ditko, quote-unquote, Spider-Man figure,
mm-hmm.
you know, to those specs. So that just goes to show you just how early and different that was from what's out now and what's known as Spider-Man. The colors were darker, various things like that. The pose is way different.
Yeah, and one of the things is it was his costume was a little bit more busier. He put a lot more webbing on the face mask and the body, so it seemed like it's more busy, more detailed, whereas Romita Sr. took a step back and cleaned it up, made it a lot less webbing and more definition, I would almost say. Everybody's put their little spin on the costume and things like that. But, I could see what you're saying, you know, with the Bagley art, you know, he did look like a hero of the 90s, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
It was actually John Romita Jr. that I think drew me into Spider-Man as an artist the most, because he just looks so different than everybody else. You know, he's got that J.R. Jr. style that it looks nothing like his father's even. He has this action movie feel to Spider-Man that so little other people get. When you're watching an issue, like, literally, you feel like you're watching an issue of Spider-Man when J.R. Jr. draws it. You know, you're not just reading it, you're watching a moving picture, almost.
The poses he chooses are incredible. It's funny that the first arc of Straczynski's run was mentioned, because I totally just read that for the first time myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of the first big chunk at once of Romita Jr. that I've taken in a very long time.
Yeah.
I agree with you 100% on that, because just the way he paced out everything, and he had, you know, the little bounce marks and everything for where he's been, and the crashing through walls, and had his own style. So I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah.
His stuff looks better there than it has been in Eternals and World War Hulk. I think it might be the inker. I think Scott Hanna inked him on that, you know, Straczynski stuff. But, like, his Eternals and World War Hulk, the inking just looks really, really thick and blocky. And I know that's Klaus Janson, and you know, oh, it's Klaus Jensen or whatever, but it just doesn't work for me with Romita Jr. He needs to go back to Scott Hanna or something.
It's the
to
colors
me anyway.
Too, Brent. It's the, yeah. definitely the colors, because the way that like the city shined off of Spider-Man in those early
yeah.
Straczynski stuff, it's,
yeah.
It's out of this
world. That helped a lot, too.
It's luminous. It's totally luminous, and that's so, what, you know, he's going through the city in the night, and that's what you want to see. You want to see the light shining off him and everything.
Yeah. I'm kind of wondering who's going to ink him when he goes back to Amazing next year.
Mm-hmm.
If it's going to be Klaus Jansen or, you know, somebody else.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
When somebody has yeah. kind of a blocky style like Romita Jr., the last thing you want is an inker that does, or a colorist that doesn't get him.
I agree. Yeah.
It makes or breaks it, you know.
Yeah. And I'll tell you another thing he does great, that he actually, I know people are going to be shocked to hear me say this, but he actually surpasses his father in one area of Spider-Man. He really can get the facial expressions through that mask somehow. Mm-hmm. If you look at his artwork, it's like you can, it's almost like he's not wearing a mask. You can read his expressions, even though if you look at it carefully, you're not seeing much difference
yeah.
between one pose and the other, but somehow the emotions come through. I mean, his father was incredible at that, but I really think J.R. Jr. has surpassed his father in that one aspect.
Yeah.
It's incredible how he can get those emotions through.
Well, I still kind of wish, though, that, and again, this is kind of got to sound kind of weird now that I said that he's my favorite, but I still kind of wish somebody would redraw his, like, women faces sometimes, because they always have this, again, because this is part of his style, this square jaw, which looks perfectly fine on guys, but Mary Jane sometimes has such huge eyes and a huge mouth that kind of make her look like an alien.
Well, at least it's I'm gonna take a shot, but at least it's not Cell Buscema.
Oh
I'm sorry. Have you seen his girls through the Clone Saga? I'm sorry,
it's official. Just Bill has just turned off this podcast.
I'm so sorry. Hey, his work on Spider-Girl, amazing, but those spec issues from the 90s, I want to tear my hair out.
Uh-huh.
It's just, oh, so I know what you're saying with the square jaw stuff, but, you know, at least we'll have playing tic-tac-toe on their faces when
yeah.
they look upset.
Yeah.
I have to admit, John Romita Jr.'s women tend to kind of look alike. Yeah, sometimes you're just Gladys in color, so you can tell hair colors. You know, oh, there's the blonde, there's a redhead. Nah, I can tell who's who now.
Plus, Mummy Aunt May. I'll just leave it at that. Because sometimes when he draws Aunt May, it kind of looks like she's been alive since, like, the 1800s.
You mean she hasn't?
What?
Huh?
Yeah, let's not turn this into our Scooby-Doo impression hour. but, yeah, actually, I want to go back to the 70s and the 80s a little bit here, because, well, we were talking, like, the 70s Clone Saga, and that, and I guess we'll go into the 80s also, but I want to talk costume a little bit. And I'd say that once his costume developed in the 70s, you got the typical blue and reds, like the way that they would look for years to come. One important question I have to ask, and this is out to everybody out there, webbing under the arms or not?
I knew you were going there. Knew you were going there.
because it's changed. Almost every single artist draws it differently. And J.R. Jr. is still a proponent of the webbings under the arms, and it's said that he will continue to draw the webbing under the arms in his arc he's doing on Amazing Spider-Man in the future. But yeah, Chris, webbing or none?
Yes, webbing.
Okay.
No doubt about it. I mean, there's no two ways about it. And just kind of go on a slight tangent. I remember it was either in the 80s, late 80s, or early 90s, there was an action issue in Spider-Man where they addressed that, where suddenly, like, he was redoing a costume because he had all his other costumes were just nothing but patchwork.
Uh-huh.
And he found a new supply of nylon. They wrote that in. He goes, hey, look, I can actually have my webbings back. You know, they explained it, that it had gotten ripped through the ears and that he never could have enough money to remake them. And when I remember seeing that, I go, yes, finally somebody remembered the webbings under the arms.
See, that's it. When he eventually is no longer with Mary Jane, thanks to Joe Quesada, he has to start dating the heir to a nylon fortune.
Hear that? He's going to learn to sew again.
right. Jen, webbing or no?
Well, since spiders don't glide unless they're Tony Stark's lapdog, I'll go with no.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Burn.
And I used to like you so much, Jen.
Oh, there goes my last friend. Thanks, Chris.
Aw.
I forgive you.
Right now, Jen is doing the Charlie Brown walk away.
Yeah, exactly. You picture it. No. The Spider-Man No More walk away from the podcast and headset in the trash can.
Or as I like to call it, the George Michael from Arrested Development walk.
Oh. Head down.
Brent, webbing or no for you?
No. Just looks weird. And not meant, if they're going to have it, then all the artists need to do it.
Right.
So, you know, back in the 90s or whatever, it seemed like, you know, one issue he'd have it, one issue he doesn't. I think it's an artist preference, but it needs to be something like, you know, Batman's belt is supposed to be the same way through all the books. So If they're going to have it, they need to have it all across the board.
Yeah. I'm with you on that, though, because I absolutely hate it when, like, issues that are happening at the exact same time in Spider-Man and in Batman have major differences with the costume that are so apparent when you look at it.
Well, I don't mind that if issues in Spider-Man and Batman are at the same time, mm-hmm. you know, because they're two completely different characters.
Well, yes. No. I get that. I get that entirely. Thank you very much for calling me out on that, Brent. In fact, this is Brent's last episode, so I want to thank him for being on the show. It's absolutely fantastic. But
I've passed the one-year mark, so now I'm being expelled.
Oh, snap. Jeez. No, but I
have a few months on my cast then. Yes.
Yay. But yeah, no, well, you know what I meant by that. That like when like Detective Comics and Batman come out at the same time and like he has one belt in one and another in the other, or like in one he'll have one bat on his outfit, but in the other he has another, just like in Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man and like Spectacular Spider-Man, if he had the webs under his arms in one but not in the other, that's just inconsistent.
Yeah. Hey, we're having that happen now between New Avengers. He's still in the friggin' black costume in New Avengers.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And
that's because Lino Yu can draw him much faster if he's in black. He doesn't have to bother with the webs. That's how it gets his issues out so fast.
Oh, and Punisher War Journal number 13.
That's true.
Which, if you haven't read yet, anybody out there, read it. It is the best damn issue of Punisher War Journal so far. It was absolutely hilarious.
Better than 4.
I thought number 12 was pretty good.
12 was good. 12 was good, but 13 here has a new artist, and I like the previous artist, but this one just captures the style of the issue so well. Let's just put it this way, and this is a bit of a spoiler here, but this might get you to actually pick it up. The return of Al Craven, son of Craven.
Oh, no.
Another one?
Yeah,
did that guy pop out?
Yeah. No. Well, no, this is Craven's son. This is the movie guy.
This is the Hollywood one.
Yeah, this is Hollywood Al Craven.
I'm thinking like Vladimir, you know, Grim Hunter back in the Clone Saga.
Uh-huh. Oh, God, yeah, him. Yeah, he went away after a while. I think he died or something. But...
I think Kane kicked his butt. That's what happened.
Yeah, this is the same Craven that showed up in, what was it, the new Secret Wars they did. With Gravity in it, and Venom, and Hank Pym, and all that. I can't think of what the hell it was called all of a sudden.
Beyond.
There you go. Thank you, Brent. Yeah, but this is the one that showed up in Beyond. But he's corralling supervillains to make his own zoo.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Let's just say that the Rhino and the Vulture are going to have some problems.
So I guess he gave up his Hollywood lifestyle, huh? He's no longer L.
Yeah, I think he might have snapped a little bit.
He had that, what is that, that one series or that one book, Call Me Al or something like that. I think it was subtitled.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, gosh.
Yeah, I remember that when he was trying to make it in Hollywood, the miniseries he had.
Or one of the white suit and everything. Yeah. Oh, it was horrible.
Yeah. He kind of had the Beyonders outfit going there for a while with the white leisure suit. But, yeah, it's definitely worth picking up if you haven't. But just to go back to what I was saying, he had the black costume in that, so I don't even know when the hell One More Day is taking place. Or
it's a big confusion.
Yeah.
Well, however, I've heard some people say, you know, because there's scrolls about, don't make any judgments on that kind of stuff, but ooh. Damn it, I am.
Let's actually go on to the next costume, because I guess we're going costume to costume here. The black costume, which was introduced in was that the second Secret Wars or the first one? That was the first Secret Wars, right?
First Secret Wars, yes.
Okay. When it was first introduced, what was your initial impression, Chris?
I was like, what? What's this? I mean, it was like I could see in my mind, you know, logically why it was better. You know, yes, you could hide in the shadows, you can do this, you could do that. And it did have some nice features, you know, the being able to camouflage itself, changing different outfits, the webbing, built-in webbing, things like that. I was like, yeah, but I was like, it's not Spider-Man. It's not the red and blue. I mean, and call me jaded, but even back then I thought, it's not going to last. It's going to come back. It's got to come back. And, you know, I don't know if it was foresight or wishful thinking. I like it. It's not my favorite. And, you know, I just like, I hope he never switches it to it permanently. I don't mind seeing it come back in a few times here and there, like in Back in Black. It was nice to see it again. Mm-hmm. But I don't want it to be permanent. I want the red and blue to be permanent with the weapons on the arm.
Okay. See, you're a traditionalist when it comes to Spider-Man.
Yes, I am. Okay. But I've enjoyed all his different versions of his costume. I even like the Scarlet Spider with the hoodie. I like that costume.
Hey, I just like that costume, again, because of the way he put it together. You know, he just went to a store, found some things that looked spider-ish, and put it on.
It was actually at a museum. There was some kind of spider exhibit.
There you go.
That's my favorite costume, the Scarlet one.
Yeah. But yeah, actually, let me go to Jen on this one. Your take on the black costume?
I think it's sharp as hell, but I think it was a little too drastic at the time that they I'm a fan more so of subtle changes that update and not so much full change like that was, cuz the costume that he already had still continues to be timeless. So there was really no necessary need in my personal eyes, but in looking back though, the thing looks really great. I'm not a fan of the blue highlights back when printing required such and they couldn't really do gray apparently for some reason.
Yeah,
but it looked sharp, you know. I'm glad it stuck around for a bit because I'd rather see them stick with a decision than change it right after. And it had some great storylines with it test driving Peter around the city while he sleeps, and you know, the dream and stuff with the, you know, it brought along a lot of great storylines to come. So, you know, how can you turn a blind eye to it?
Yeah, and actually, I'm glad you mentioned the blue highlights, because that was actually something that bothered me on the animated series.
Oh, I know, it was bad, especially when you got that second appearance of Venom, and he got like the forearms with the red and the blue.
Mm-hmm.
A little ridiculous.
Yeah, and just like also like in the Marvel vs. Capcom games, Venom was always blue.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, come on! It couldn't.
It's like a navy blue. He's dark blue, wasn't he?
Yeah, but that's the thing. In the Marvel vs. Capcom ones, they gave him like a sky blue.
Yeah, no, like full on blue.
Yeah, dude,
it wasn't sky blue.
Well, okay, it might like not have been sky blue, but it was definitely blue.
It wasn't even royal blue.
Yeah.
If you picked Venom and then your friend picked him, he got the real color.
That's true. Yeah, so that's why I always pick second player.
Of course.
Yeah, but...
Of course.
Of course, of course. But actually, one of my favorite Spider-Man stories of all time is Kraven's Last Hunt. And the black costume is very important in that. Because had he have been wearing the red and blues at the time, that story wouldn't have had nearly as much of an impact on me. Because seeing Kraven in that black outfit, just, I don't know, it felt so menacing. It felt like, you know, this dude has like a, like, he is out of his freaking mind. Had he been in the red and blue, it would have been out of his freaking mind in a different way. It would have been silly. Yeah,
it sounds cliche, but it sent it to a darker place. It really did.
Yeah. Some people might say that that's the whole darkening of the 80s thing, you know, Dark Knight Returns leading to people wanting to have a darker Spider-Man or something like that. But those stories, though, they are pretty grim and gritty, and they're still good. I mean, it still feels like Spider-Man. It's just a different time, a different era.
I've definitely rarely spent more than $20 on a freaking hardcover because our prices were still so ridiculous. But that was one that I was happy to throw down as much money as it was worth, was Kraven's Last Hunt.
Oh, yeah.
That storyline was phenomenal, and I 100% agree with you on the black costume. That made that story. The red and blues, unless they darken those colors right down, you know, and had them only had only highlights and had them in the shadows, it would not nearly as worked as much as it did. Because he was constantly in sewers creeping around at night.
Yeah.
Just set the whole tone.
Yeah. And I mean, even in the, and again, we're going to talk about the movies later, but even in like in Spider-Man 3, there were some moments where that black costume just worked perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But yeah, Brent, what do you think about the black costume?
I think it looks good. If you want to set up, it does, like you guys were saying, it does set up Spider-Man as a darker character if you want to write him that way. Because you can put him in the shadows and just have the spider light up or the eyes light up, where you can't really do that with the red and blues. I mean, you can just have the red show and let the blues be black and stuff like that. But if you were trying to write a more menacing Spider-Man, I think it works a lot better. And that's probably why it's so fan-liked, is because maybe the stories of that time, I think Kraven's Last Hunt maybe did a lot for it. But, I mean, also, it a lot of people probably like it because it's easier to draw. I mean, how many times, like in comics, have you tried to draw Spider-Man, gotten to the part where you had to do the webs, and you're like, oh, fuck. Do this. God damn it, why? Why did I have to draw Spider-Man this time? Why can't I do somebody easier?
Brent,
so that's probably why it's so like.
You just actually saved me, because for my secret, my not-so-secret Santa on the forums, I have to draw either Spider-Man, Daredevil, or Captain America. I'm drawing a black costume Spidey.
Yeah, I did my goal.
Well, I'm doing all my Christmas cards this year, drawing little cartoons of various Marvel characters, and I definitely got to the red and blues, and I was kind of like, I'm just going to leave them out. People will get the point.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of the most difficult to draw costumes out there, and many artists have said that. Yeah, the worst time in my life was when I had to draw red and blue Spider-Man.
I feel real sorry for all those artists I've paid commissions for to do Spider-Man now.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's like, I'll give you a $10 discount if you let me draw the black costume.
Hey, I asked for the Scarlet Spider outfit, so I'm really awesome.
Yeah, so, all right, so moving on from the black costume, let's move on to the 90s, and let's move on to not exactly a redesign, but more of a return, because he was the guy who, like, returned him to the red and blues. And with Spider-Man number one, we had Todd McFarlane in his, I guess, glory days, drawing a Mary Jane with really, really long, curly, wavy hair, and a Peter Parker that looked incredibly mature, and a Spider-Man that was lanky. Very, very lanky. But that's sort of how, like, Spider-Man became after a while. So I guess I'll ask Brent first. Was this almost like a redesign for you, or was this the same Spider-Man you grew to know, just drawn differently?
I was going to argue with you tooth and nail that it wasn't a redesign, because it's just an artistic interpretation. The eyes being bigger is not a redesign of the costume, and blah, blah, blah. And you had to go and save your ass by going, oh, it's a... I don't know what...
Sucker.
Fucker.
Sucker.
Damn it.
No, I say sucker, not fucker. Yeah, I mean, explain your position.
Anybody who says it's a redesign, I think, is silly. Because you can't really call Neil Adams' Batman a redesign the same way you can't call Todd McFarlane's Spider-Man a redesign. It's just his style. You know, he wanted to make the eyes bigger, so what?
Yeah.
They were bigger before then. Like, if you look at, I guess, original Romita, his Spider-Man compared to Ditko, mm-hmm. the eyes are still bigger. They're not like, you know, the regular Ditko eyes or whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
So just the exaggeration is not a redesign. Okay. That's just his style.
Okay. Jim, what was McFarlane to you?
I think he was the main pinnacle of exaggeration of the character, and he really used that quality to knot the webbing, add details into the webbing that had never, ever been. He was also known as the artist that really started drawing him in crazy poses, acrobatic poses. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the knees right up to the ears or past, and all this crazy midair contortionist stuff, and like you say, opening the eyes. And I think, as much as a lot of people seem to not be a huge fan of his art specifically, in Spider-Man, at least in my own experience, but it just brought this new life into the character, whether it be web swinging, the characters he brought in himself, the details, and as you say, we've got new hair on MJ as well as a mullet on Peter. Ready for mullets.
Mullets return. Mullets return into the conversation. Great. Actually, you were kind of right with your misstatement there of web swimming for a minute there, because a lot of the times when Todd McFarlane would draw Spider-Man, he was swimming in webs, man. That was that, it's like they were all over the place, especially in that in that Spider-Man number one cover where he's got that like almost like web hammock he's sitting on with like webs all around him. It's he just went crazy on the web sometimes.
And some of the first places that we saw that for artists to kind of decide whether they were going to go with that style with, you know, a fist full of webs or one strand.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's all stylist thing, but
that should be the Spider-Man 4 title, A Fist Full of Webs.
a Frank Miller movie, Spider-Man, A Fist Full of Webs. Coming soon, Batman, the goddamn Batman. Oh, good times, good times. Chris, what was your take on Todd McFarlane when he first showed up?
I liked it. It was over the top. And I did, when I first saw his artwork, the webbing was really what jumped out at me. I'm like, I thought of it for a second and go, that's really how it would be. It wouldn't be some nice, neat strand. It would be kind of all over the place. But I liked it. I mean, yes, it's not my favorite, but it really, what I liked about it was very dramatic. It really caught your eye. There were so many artists, as soon as he did it, they all started aping his style. Everybody had to do the webbing like him. Mm-hmm. So it did affect a lot of other artists. So and it was bold. It was, and I agree, it was not, it wasn't a whole new design. It was his style. He kind of just slightly redefined the character with the eyes and stuff like that. Because for the longest time, no one ever adjusted the eyes. They kind of left them alone. They were all the small, and he went with the big eyes. You know, I might find fault in him in the fact that because of what he did there, changing the eyes to the big ones, now artists feel that they can play with it all they want. Sometimes you see in one book, the eyes are big, and then suddenly they go to small, like they're almost like real eyes. Mm-hmm. So I'll fault him for that. He kind of started a bad trend there. But when I first saw it, it was like, wow, it just leapt off the pages. And yeah, I agree with those crazy poses. I think he was trying to channel Ditko, because you know Steve always had those incredible poses, and he tried, but he went a little overboard on it, I think. But I can't fault him. He tried, but it did revigorate the books because they weren't doing so well sales-wise at that point. Mm-hmm. And when that happened, it was like, wow, the sales jumped. People were all talking about Spider-Man again. So I like it. It's not my favorite. When I read it, the old issues, and I see that stuff, it takes me back. But I don't know if I would ever want to go back to that again. I don't mind little things from back then. Like I said, the webbing. If someone wanted to incorporate that now, I'd be happy with it. I'd be fine with it.
Yeah. And I do have to say that I was much more of a fan of Todd McFarlane when he just drew as opposed to writing. Because that Spider-Man number one, I reread it about a year ago, and it was like reading something that was 4 pages long. I was done with it in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It had no substance to it whatsoever. And that was a sign of the times in those early 90s was that 89 when Spider-Man number one came out, or around when the 90s first started, that it was much more art over writing. And that was a trend you saw in those times.
Big, huge muscles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For something that continued to be worth reading over and over again, you got to have both. You got to have writing and art.
Although I could have done without the big poodle hair of Mary Jane, so I wasn't a big fan of that.
That was so 80s. Oh, my God.
Twisted Sister.
Oh, man.
I swear she was right out of a Whitesnake video.
She should have been on the hood of a car somewhere.
Oh, you robbed me of that by a quarter of a second.
Oh, man.
I'm so going to say that.
We're going to have a throwdown, no doubt. Not one of those Bobby Flay throwdowns where you got to cook either. This is a real throwdown.
We'll just circle each other, you know, with the fists going in circles and just not do anything for the next hour.
So in other words, a Todd McFarlane book.
Exactly. Ooh. Full circle. To you, sir.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'll be here all weekend at weddings and bar mitzvahs.
Try the veal.
Yes.
Hey,
Try the veal. Trent's never been on the show, and she knows try the veal. I'm so happy about that. Oh, yes. That's like the catchphrase of Comic Timing. Comic Timing, try the veal.
Well, feels
no,
good,
it was Brent
so.
Cassina says, I say something stupid and you go, Brent Cassina, everybody, try the veal.
Yes. Yes. I forget, was that Juan who did it first or was that me?
It's probably both. You guys both did it at the same time okay. on that one episode.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a very silly question right now, and I hope for as silly answers as possible. What was, at the same time, give me your favorite and your most ridiculous. Spider-Man has had a lot of gadgets over the years, some of which have worked, and others are like, people are trying too hard to make him like Iron Man in the tech stuff. What was your favorite tech item, and what was your most ridiculous tech item Spider-Man has had over the years? Jen, you can go first.
Sorry. Spider-Mobile.
Oh, yeah.
Ridiculous.
and your reasoning behind that?
It's a freaking Spider-Mobile. He's flying through the city.
I liked your when you guys went through that, and you were just like, they got rid of it the second issue after that because they were sort of forced
to. Oh, easy. He didn't even have his driver's license. He was mowing people down on the streets. Like, come on.
It would have been better if he had Aunt May as his butler. Like just driving him around if Aunt May was driving him around the entire time because he didn't have his driver's license, that would have been perfect.
Well, apparently, I guess he didn't have to have a license for a moped, and that's what he had.
I guess.
So.
And what's your favorite bit of tech?
The armor was kind of cool, just because it was a bit of a switch up. Mm-hmm.
This is the spider armor, not the ice armor, right? Yeah, back in, like, what was it, Web of 150 or something like that, when he had that silver stuff?
I was thinking that, but then I kind of went towards the Iron Spider costume in general, because it just looks sharp. You know, if we were talking Ben Reilly and including him, I'd say the impact webbing and stingers.
Oh, no question. Yeah. Chris, what about you?
Least favorite, it has to be the Iron Spider-Man, the one Tony Stark made. I just...
Oh.
Three extra arms. Hello.
I knew you were going to go there, man.
Spider.
He wants you to have four. Like, that's the best part.
I know. The Waldos, he called them, I guess. That was just stupid. It looked horrible. I mean, I remember somebody redesigned it one time with just changing the colors to red and blue, and it was a dramatic improvement. But the red and gold was horrible. Yeah. I mean, a lot of neat gadgets. I mean, but it was just – It was Spider-Man turned into Iron Man Jr. It was just terrible.
You know what my reasoning behind the three arms is? Tony ran out of arms. that's the only reason for three arms. Because that equals five arms.
It's ridiculous. It's like, hello, can't you just put one more?
Hey, he had as many arms as he had fingers on each hand.
Oh, God. Now,
Is it at all possible that was a mistake that just kind of was too far to fix?
No, from the looks of things, I mean, Chris Bakula was the one who first originally designed the outfit, if I remember correctly, and he drew it with three arms, and...
My God, I was hoping that was a mistake that just went too far.
Nope.
Oh,
yeah, I remember reading somewhere that
Quesada said it was like a more striking profile or something. Like a silhouette, if it had three arms
I guess he's kind of going on design theory that, you know, odd versus even, but nonetheless, come on.
Well, I also realized, though, it's like if he were to have like the six arm thing going on, then he would look just like what is it, Iron Spider?
The Spider Kid.
Steel Spider?
Steel Spider. There we go. Steel Spider. Yeah, yeah. Steel Spider. He looked just like Steel Spider if that was the case.
That's true.
Yeah.
I can see that.
No, that's the worst. I'm sorry. First of all, even think about logistics. I mean, it was just horrible. But trying to swing around with three extra arms, aren't you off-balanced? I mean, wouldn't it just
were inside the back of his thing.
Yeah, but he had him pop out when he would sometimes. There's that classic first shot of it. Remember? It looks like one of the arms is like coming through the middle of his legs. It was just like horrible.
Well, I think you just answered what the third arm is. Anyway. A very convenient third arm.
Maybe that's what they were counting as the fourth arm.
Oh, no.
We won't.
We went almost a whole episode without going there.
Mount Chickabarrow. And what's your favorite bit of and I almost said equipment. Thanks. What's your favorite bit of spider tick, Chris?
Web shooters. I like that. They were simple. he did things with them. He modified them a couple times. He went from the basic metal ones to plastic ones. He added a warning device to let him know he was running out of webbing. He even modified it so he can shoot spider tracers.
Yeah.
It was a great all-purpose one. I love seeing them make comebacks now in the books, you know, because he no longer uses them, and every once in a while they bring it back. I think the last one was in that Valentine's issue, the Spider-Man and Mary Jane one.
Yeah.
That was great seeing them again. I just liked them. They were just they worked, and they added a little something to the character. I mean, it was great seeing him swing around town fighting somebody and suddenly, like, ready to shoot a web line and suddenly, oh, crap, I'm out of webbing. You know, like, fall.
Yeah.
It was great. Showed his genius. And then he did other things. He was able to modify the fluid so when he fought someone, he could add a little this or add a little that to it.
Yeah.
It was good.
Sandman, Hydra Man, both of those, it worked very well for him.
Yeah, and then like Jen mentioned a moment ago, you got the impact weapon that Ben Reilly added to it, and they're just great weapons. They showed how much of a genius he really was.
And actually, that's a good point. Impact weapon was a wonderful idea, and yet when Peter did it, it's like, well, I didn't think of it, so I'm not going to use it.
Yeah,
they just got rid of it entirely.
Well, his daughter uses it.
Impact webbing were
is that the web ball?
Yeah.
Yeah, web balls, yeah. That it kind of exploded on contact, so they kind of...
I use that all the time in that video game. Web ball!
Oh, yeah.
They were mostly famous...
Yeah.
They were mostly famous, too, for that fight that you talked about where Scarlet was up against Venom, and the impact weapon was so strong that it separated Eddie from the symbiote. I mean, how many things do we know other than the typical Sonics or Heat or Fire that... have been able to do that.
Not much.
So that was pretty incredible, I thought. That really brought the clone into, you know, made you take him seriously, too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Well, that and the last time we ever saw real impact like that was actually in One More Day, with Iron Man getting all wrapped up in the webbing. But that's a different thing, which I'm going to ask, actually, after I ask this question to Brent. Same question I asked everybody else, Brent. Give me your most ridiculous and your favorite.
Ridiculous is probably one of the couple, like, Spider-Man robot crap that Mysterio built.
Oh, God.
You remember those? Those are ridiculous.
I remember those, yeah.
And my favorite is the Iron Man armor.
We are so split. That's great.
I really like the Iron Man armor. I'm sorry.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, okay, here's my most ridiculous. And this might actually lead to people, like, wanting to winch me, but... I hate that damn spider signal.
Yeah, I hate that too.
The light.
Yeah, it's the most pointless thing because it's like, okay, he's not Batman, so it's not like somebody else is shining it. No, he has it on his belt. All right? So you're going to let the villains know you're coming by shining a huge spider emblem on top of them while they're standing there? Come on.
He had it on the Spider-Mobile also, too. Don't forget.
Uh-huh.
That's true.
My favorite bit of tech, I think, is actually the spider tracer, because it's pretty ingenious when you think about it. I mean, it's a small little device that you can throw whenever it needs to and just follow somebody to, like, their secret headquarters or something like that. I mean, just think, if Batman had used this more often, he would have found out where Joker was so much more often.
Can we go back to the spider signal or whatever?
Yeah.
I remember reading a comic or seeing on the TV show, Spider-Man dove into the water and then turned on the spider signal on his belt as a flashlight in the water. And yeah. I was like, what the fuck? Are you kidding me?
That was
the red light
series.
Is not going to help you.
Yeah, that was on the
you might
animated
as well,
series.
Like, shine
that.
A pen light in the fucking ocean and turn on your stupid-ass spider signal. Red versus deep, dark blue water? No, it's going to be purple.
That's it.
Hello?
Here's what I want to do, okay? I want to go to Coney Island, all right? I want to go to the ocean, and I want to bring a fucking pen light. And don't forget,
it's underneath his costume, so he's got to go through all that material also.
Right.
That's
what drove me nuts about it. That's what drove me nuts.
It was like underneath his pants, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, Spider-Man pulls down his pants to use the spider signal.
He was wearing a belt just for that. That's what I couldn't believe.
Yeah,
he's wearing a belt underneath his costume. You know, belts are supposed to go on top Fucking A, man.
Yeah.
Swear to God.
Well, it also held his extra web cartridges and held a couple other things. He had his own utility belt. It was like a little mini Batman. He had those nose filters in there.
Yeah, but
don't forget those.
I think we've established at this point, though, that Spider-Man is not Batman.
That's right.
it's like they kept and trying it had to give him and stuff.
It also had the camera, too. Don't forget.
His belt held his camera, and there's no bulge anywhere in his pants. Yeah,
I know, exactly.
That's what that was.
Clear photos through his costume.
You see, he actually got an image inducer from Xavier that he would activate just to make everybody think that he had nothing underneath his pants.
You know, speaking of underneath his pants, I'm reminded of this really funny midget joke.
Oh, God. listen to Rogue's Gallery Episode 5 to know what the hell he's talking about there. We're not going back into the damn midget joke. Thanks a lot.
Oh, my God. That was awesome. Sorry. Thank you, Damien.
Damien, you're the man. You're the man.
Though I thought the end of that joke was going to be...
Oh, man. Have either of you listened to that?
Not yet.
Okay.
I was kind of in the middle of it.
Okay, cool. When you finish it, let me know whether or not you think it's the most ridiculous thing or the most hilarious thing you've heard.
We'll do.
All right. It's actually at the end of all the rest of the bloopers I put that because I didn't want anybody who were listening with their kids to hear that lewd and crude joke that Damien made. I had to put a disclaimer in there and everything. All right. But let's go back to the web shooters for a minute because a major change has happened within Spider-Man in the last couple of years. He no longer has web shooters. They're internal web shooters now. So here's the question. Is he better off this way or not? Because actually Chris made a good comment about the spider tracers, one of my favorite tech items he has. Where does he keep the tech now? Where does he keep the spider tracers? Does he have a little like spider pocket that's hidden somewhere where he's able to take them out? Because
well, he's complaining about not having pockets, so I kind of doubt that.
Yeah, I know.
Well, now that he's not married anymore, he won't have a boner, so he can just stuff it in his pants, and it won't matter. he won't be called into the middle of an action while he's getting some action or something like that.
Try the veal. Yeah, but it is a good question to ask. I mean, is he better off with them internal or not? Chris, internal or not?
My personal preference is no, I do not like them. For the character, I can see why he would prefer it because then he doesn't have to worry about running out. He doesn't have to worry about this and that. But to me, it made it more interesting. Like I said, you know, he could change the formula to do different things. Now, on a little side note, I have a question. Okay, so suddenly he now has eternal web shooters, right? That
yeah.
He can duplicate everything that his web shooters do.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they have the same limitation that they dissolve in a couple hours?
Ooh, that's true.
I mean,
huh.
You know, no, it's like that made no sense to me. They should either be the odds of him picking the exact or roughly the same amount of time when he designed web fluid. Hello? That's a big problem in my book.
Yeah, and he recently actually like referenced that in Punisher War Journal because he webs up Punisher and Punisher's like, how long does this take to dissolve? And he's like, usually a couple hours.
Yeah, he
maybe
did the
it's
same
like
thing
a mental
with Luke
thing.
Cage and Avengers. Remember when he gave Luke the spider boxing gloves, I guess you would say, to fight Electro?
Yeah.
He did the same thing. That's a couple hours. What am I supposed to do? No, sorry.
He always claims that's the spider inputted that knowledge into his head when he got bit.
Uh-huh.
So maybe that was always the case, and when he was given the knowledge of how to make it, that was just built into the formula that he created. That's the only thing I can come up with.
I'd like for somebody to actually draw that conversation in one of the comics. You know, like he has like that moment, like the spider's talking to him, like, hello, Peter!
Spider fairy.
The spider totem. You don't forget the totem. All that.
Here's how you make your webs for your web shooter.
Mix toothpaste and jello.
Just add water.
Oh, God.
Instant water.
How did they come about with the regular web shooters? Because that wasn't in the Amazing Run, was it?
What?
How he built
the natural ones.
Oh, yeah.
No, his all natural ones.
They actually that came after the whole like spider cocoon thing.
So that was after the other?
Yeah, that was after the other.
That should have been one of the things in that fucking story instead of the big boner that comes out of his wrist. What's it called?
The
stinger.
Stinger.
Little stinger
what
thing.
What is your
yeah.
obsession with boners tonight, Brent? Seriously.
I don't know.
Come on, man.
Well, it's a bone. It comes out of his wrist. It's a boner. Come on.
All right.
He's a Wolverine Jr. look. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
X-21. No.
Yeah. They're supposed to be stingers, right?
Yeah.
Which yeah. they don't get used either.
Yeah.
Since when did spiders have stingers?
Never.
Their butts.
Well, this was supposed to be like the next like evolution of Spider-Man, wasn't it? Or spiders? Like I'm more advanced than regular spiders.
Has that web fly thingy cocoon girl ever shown up again?
Yes, actually.
Yeah, he finally battled her and kicked her butt
in the neighborhood.
The end of Friendly Neighborhood.
And they explain those stingers, or whatever you want to call them, is that they only come out like in moments of dire crisis.
Yeah,
which means never again.
So, in other words, they'll never come out when he strains too much in a toilet, which is good.
Ouch.
Trying to get that last little bit off. That would suck if he had, like, his arms wrapped around his, stomach. Like, he's really concentrating.
Oh, God. And then... Spider-Man died today at the age of 27 when he impaled himself.
With his stingers taking the seat.
Gonna die like Elvis on the toilet.
Oh, God. Peanut butter and banana sandwich in hand. But, yeah, it does change the dynamic of Spider-Man a lot to have them internal versus external. You know, because he doesn't have those limitations, like you mentioned before, Chris.
Yeah. And it was also good for a couple of jokes. I mean, he could do different things. I mean, there was times when he'd make the joke during a fight. He goes, "Hey, these things are not cheap to make." I mean, now he loses that joke. He can't. I mean, he could say it, but doesn't have the same meaning because he had to pay for web fluid, and things like that. It does change it a lot. And to me, really, it takes away from the fact that it shows how much of a genius he was. He was 15 years old. Yeah, when he was 15 years old. Mm-hmm. I was lucky to put together my bike after I wrecked it when I was 15 years old. I mean, this guy was building web shooters and creating web fluid.
Yeah.
Nobody give Chris a Spider-Mobile.
Uh-oh. Look out. Well, also, if I remember correctly, wasn't there a moment where Reed Richards even, complimented him on that? Like, he was amazed that somebody that young was able to do that?
Yeah. I think that was in the Human Torch one. Him and I think it was. I'm not quite sure about that. I'm with Stupid.
Yeah.
I think that was. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. 15 years old. He's a genius, and like I said, he's able to adjust the formula to make it fireproof, so he can fight the Molten Man or something like that. It's incredible. Yeah.
He can't.
Now he can't.
He can't just drink hot sauce and turn it molten now.
Yeah, exactly.
That would be a cool power.
or he drinks some or he eats some dentine ice, and all of a sudden he's got ice ones, or he drinks a bunch of sand, and he's able to combat sand.
Oh, stop it! You're giving them ideas.
Uh-oh.
I would think if he drank hot sauce, and then he doesn't use up all the web fluid that has hot sauce in it, how that'd come out the other end. I'd hate to think about how that works.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, it could be worse. He could eat a lot of garlic and go fight Dracula. I mean, garlic webbing or something like that.
That's great. Jen, go ahead.
It's funny you guys make that connection because I think pretty much the ongoing conversation is calling them officially the wrist anuses.
Well, if he was really a spider, that's where the webbing would come out of,
Seriously. Well, honestly, in addition to that, have you seen the scary diagrams? Ouch.
Oh.
Sorry, but the back of One More Day? Ah.
No, I skipped those entirely because I didn't pick them up to get those extras.
I think that just might be everybody on the planet.
Uh-huh.
Don't care.
You know
about
what? But since I paid the extra dollar, sometimes I feel like I actually should read them.
Yeah.
I actually read the Mary Jane one. And that was boring as fuck because I didn't give a shit about how her dad's an alcoholic or whatever.
Yeah. Well, what I do like is that they've been including those bonus features now in almost every book. that, you know, you don't.
This one you get
extra.
Half of a Silver Surfer comic.
Yeah, wasn't it? Yeah, they have those Fury files and that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
that I've been watching.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I don't charge extra for.
Really loving that stuff in Messiah Complex.
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying some of that stuff in the back.
Yeah. But, Jen, actually, are you a fan of the spider anus, or are you more of a web shooter guy, girl?
Yeah, you know, hey, personally, I'm kind of half and half on it, because I love the storylines it created, and even in the animated series, it was always a huge part of, you know, oh crap, I'm out of web, or,
yeah.
You know, but at the same time, it's nice to just see him. I believe there was a scene where he was backed up by the press and there was a guy with a gun that walked up during Civil War and he, you know, nailed the gun right out even though he wasn't in costume with the web. So, I mean, I think it's time that it happened, but what really makes me upset about it is that I think they did it just because of the friggin' movies.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And it bothers me that it was the movie that was the first thing to do that.
Yeah, that's my main problem with it also, because you don't have to copy a movie every single time.
And a lot of them are doing it, and it bothers me a lot.
Yeah, like, for instance, they say, oh, no, we had this in planning stages from the beginning. There's no way you're going to convince me that Back in Black happening exactly when Spider-Man 3 came out was a coincidence.
Seriously. Or the Sandman annual in Friendly Neighborhood.
Right.
Or you could go down the list. Or another, and Venom showed up again in Sensational towards the end. So, it's just...
You know what's the sad part is? They did create web shooters for the movies.
Mm-hmm.
If you've seen them, I've seen photos of them, they look incredible.
Yeah.
And there would have been no reason why they couldn't use it
right.
at all.
Oh, they were too busy putting in stupid scenes like a dance scene and various other things to take 5 seconds to say he built web shooters.
Hey, don't you call that scene stupid, all right? Because Raph and I had such a good time walking down the street after seeing Spider-Man 3.
And mocking it.
And actually doing the Spider-Man strut. And, like, freaking people out on the street. That was good times.
Oh, come on.
Oh, you know, for some reason, that's not too hard to imagine you two guys doing that.
Yeah, Chris, since now that you've met me in real life, you can sort of imagine that, can't you?
Yeah, both of you guys. You and Raph.
Can I come to New York? Will you do it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll do it. I'll do it. Right in Podcast Arena. Definitely.
Excellent. Everyone get the digital cameras out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, come on. If Jim Seguin of Raging Bullets can do the whatish in real life, I can do that. Whatish. I'm much more of a fan of the web shooters. I feel like it's an integral part of the character that they've lost over the past couple of years. You know, it's just something like that he could be in peril if he ran out. Now he doesn't even know his own limitations. He doesn't know if he ever runs out, really.
Yeah. Well,
he's already busy crying about what's happening. He doesn't need extra tears about whether he has web or not.
Yeah, true. True, I guess.
Yeah, and there was other little things that were nice little touches. There were times where he was fighting somebody and they realized that he's using web shooters and they would literally crush him.
Yeah.
They just grab him by the wrist and crush him so he couldn't use them.
Mm-hmm.
There's times where he was with another hero and he'd get knocked out and they're like, you know, wait a minute, I know, I've seen him do it, and they fire his web shooters for him while he's unconscious. Little things like that. They can't do that anymore.
Right. And Mary Jane even did that a couple times, if I remember correctly. There were once or twice where she was able to fire it.
Yeah. There was a great one. I think it was like one of these Spider-Man Unlimited books where Peter was sick.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, but there was one in Unlimited where he was sick and she wanted him to stay at home. And he's like, no, I got to go out and save the world, right? And she got his old web shooters and webbed up the window. And he was like, oh. And then in that same book, it was to show you the opposite effect. He sneezed and he put his hands to his face. It was sort of like involuntarily let loose with the web in.
I hate when that happens.
I thought, oh, see, there's a reason why you should have web shooters and not have Eternal Ones.
Premature.
Yeah, premature.
Have I gone around the table on this yet, or Brent, did I ask you yet? Web shooters or internal?
I don't think you asked me that.
Okay. So
I was making cracks about them.
So, Brent, web shooters or internal?
Web-ternal?
Yeah, web-ternal. It's actually how he accesses the World Wide Web.
Exactly. I don't know. I kind of like them both. Doesn't matter to me.
Okay. Moving on. All right. But before I ask any questions, actually, I'm going to read a couple forum comments from the comicforums.com. We got one from Jay, I believe you pronounce it Tomio, and here's what he had to say. Just to get it out there, I have tried over the years to get into J. Michael Straczynski's Spider-Man era with no success. I just don't find him to be a convincing writer. No, I don't like his TV show either. And furthermore, I don't read Ultimate Spider-Man, not because I think it's horrific itself, but because the necessity of an Ultimate line is lost on me. To me, I see the larger purpose and even success of it clearly. I'm also not an old bastard, some comic luddite who hates all new things. I'm in my 20s. I just wanted to get that out of the way. I just got started with Spider-Man around the era where the Hobgoblin started to become a major player. The whole Ned Leeds mystery, leading into Gang War, leading into Kraven's Last Hunt, in my opinion, the last classic Spider-Man story, to the marriage, through the McFarlane run and perhaps a couple dozen issues afterwards. I think what makes Parker tick to me is it's a bit different than what seems to be the prevailing notion I tend to read about. Peter Parker, the everyman who gets thrown power and responsibility spiel, I understood it, but I can't say it ever hit me to the core. Make no mistake, this was my favorite title growing up, until, oddly enough, a run known mostly for its glitz, Michelin McFarlane. Recently, over at another podcast board, we were very briefly discussing the McFarlane run on Spidey, and this is what I said. Aside from a distinct, beautiful, and most importantly, mainstream title, there are lots of great, unique projects out there, but he did it on Spider-Man, the franchise. The thing about small press indie stuff is that if you fail, not many people see it. When you are drawing The Amazing Spider-Man, people are watching. You had what no other Spidey run hit as much for me as McFarlane did. MJ became significant and beautiful. I love Ditko, Romita Jr., and Zek. I have their issues, and while the writing always told you that MJ was the hotness, it wasn't until T-Mac drew her that the fact that there is this nerd that got one of the finest women in the world to marry him fell into place. It may have been because the age I was and I was first seeing the dumb shit guys do or get themselves into for girls, but it was this run that made Spidey the everyman people always talk about, and not just the cool broke hero who swings around and somehow beats down Fire Lord or sees Thanos get handcuffed and arrested by the NYPD. You see, creators talk about the limitations that the marriage did to the character, and all I saw was that people would actually have to learn how to write about real things. It's easy to write about James Bond. Give him a weightless, self-imposed ball chain, something permanent and vulnerable. Oh, you got superpowers and you're basically a genius-level scientist. Don't tell me about your troubles, dude. Throw in a marriage and now you have something. My favorite in this era is what draws me, I noted above, it's my era. I certainly have gone back to read the previous eras and love them too, but the days of hitting a newsstand and picking up comics is, I'm afraid, gone, so I keep those titles at the forefront. McFarlane was the first artist I looked for and knew by name, and this didn't occur just in the U.S., the craze of over this era. McFarlane, Lee, Liefeld, Silvestri, Portasio, Keown, etc. was being talked about by kids where I was in Italy when kids talked about and read comics. People who weren't fans in this era have no idea how huge this industry was. We are talking the hot books didn't settle for a 150,000 print run. They reached millions. Every kid that's playing video games now or would be and can't afford them would have been reading comics then. I can't comment on a lost element because anything in the JMS run is as good as lost to me. Favorite suit is a classic, although I don't at all mind the black costume either. I'm a complete Ditko fan, but if you're asking somebody my age what Spider-Man they grew up with, it's T-Mac. Somewhat touched above, MJ is a huge part of my Spider-Man. Also, the significance of the actual death of Gwen Stacy, not the character herself, was huge in comics and shouldn't be understated. JJJ, what can I say? Best moment? When he pwned the X-Men in Secret Wars. I think that is often lost through all the angst, is that Spider-Man is one powerful SOB and would be a hard dude to take down. Okay, not the best, but the sweetest. And there we go with that one. Long, thought-out response, and I thank him for that, definitely. So actually, let me get your guys' take on what Jay just said there. He touched on a couple things that we already touched on, but anything that he brought up that you want to mention? We haven't even talked about Gwen versus Mary Jane yet, so if you want to go talk on that a little bit, you can. But Chris, you want to comment on his comments?
Well, yeah. I think he made some really good points, and I can see why he really likes Todd McFarlane stuff. I mean, like I said before, it was different. It was very dramatic. It was a real big change from what we had been seeing. It pumped new life into the character, and like I said, some people don't like it. I liked it. It's not my favorite, but like I said, he does have a lot of good points. Thing about Mary Jane stuff like that, getting married, that is showing the character's growth. He is now having more worldly problems. It's like kind of like what I said earlier, when he went from high school, then he went to living in college where he had to worry about rent and laundry and things like that. The character is always growing, and as he grows, his problems change. And before, it was worrying about just getting home in time with the medicine for Aunt May. Now he's got to worry about his wife and this and that. So Spider-Man is a character that grows, and I really do not like the idea of them taking back the marriage, because that's a step backwards to me for the character.
Yeah,
but
thus limiting his growth.
Yeah. I mean, it would be one thing if, like, he went through the period where Mary Jane left him. I mean, that's something a lot of marriages nowadays face, you know, where they get separated or divorced. So, in a sense, that is still, even that's not the same as getting rid of the marriage. It is a movement forward. He's lost it. He's it's like what's happening in modern day. Like I said, there was so much in his email. It's kind of hard to remember everything he said.
But right.
He had a lot of great points. I think I'll pass the ball right now. If anything else, if anybody else remembers anything else, I'll probably chime in later. But I think he, like I said, he made a lot of good points. And, wow.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could put it so wow that he did.
It was a much more thought out post than I thought I was going to get when I posted this on there. Because usually we get like the 4 or 5 sentence thing, and he wrote like an essay on there almost. And I thank him for it, because that's a lot of great stuff he mentioned there. Jen, you got any comments?
Basically the same thing with the marriage. It really pulled it into realism, but as a girl, it's hard to sit and say that I always love reading about a guy that's committed, because that's just going to be so cliche.
Right.
But at the same, personally, I'm kind of looking forward to this One More Day spin around, as much as I'm once again going on people's blacklists, just because I'm a change wench. I need change in order to keep me interested. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot, pretty much 90% of what he had to say about Todd McFarlane is very true in my own opinion. He probably the only era that I felt Mary Jane was believable as a model.
Oh yeah,
because. Oh, yeah. It really did solidify, this isn't, the girl, it's not Gwen with a different hair color, like some artist did her in the early days. So it was, it was great to see her drawn as an absolutely beautiful woman getting these modeling jobs and acting jobs and whatnot. And I found that Todd McFarlane is probably one of the only artists that made that believable. He also did a lot of the marriage stuff in general believable. I loved what he did with Spidey, how many, I don't know, maybe a lot of people have done it, but I'll never forget Todd for doing Spider-Man hanging upside down in the Sub-City arc in adjectiveless Spider-Man eating donuts.
Oh, yeah.
People get picked off below him. it was just great. Also with Ultimate, now here's where things kind of differ for me. Though I'm not, a flag waver for Ultimate Spider-Man, I just haven't gotten into it. It was kind of below where I felt. I'm still, I just prefer 616 for me personally, because I'm not in high school anymore. But that was rude. I didn't mean it that way.
No. I do get what you're saying, though, because this is a high school Spider-Man and you're past that.
Because I'm running into the same thing with Spider-Girl right now. Okay, I get it. High school. I'm kind of so far to get past that. However, it does work for people. It should be happening instead of pulling his marriage apart. If they're going to use the excuse that they want him to be single and playing the field, so to say, I think Ultimate is the place for him to do that.
Yeah.
Rather than tearing apart what they've built in 616. I can kind of see it in that way. It's just for new people to come in. And it just happened to take off. I don't think it's once again, it's not my personal thing that I'm total go for, but some people who want to see him single and not held down and young, and the people who basically complain about everything that's 616 right now, that's where they can go if they want to.
Yeah. It's been, what, like 5 years now since Ultimate Spider-Man first came out?
Came out in 2000.
Came out in 2000. Wow, it's 7 years now. Crap. I picked it up, and mind you, this is 7 years ago, so I was still in high school.
Same.
And it resonated so well for me. Because, again, while I picked up Spider-Man for the first time when he was already married, this was a totally new experience for me. Because I picked this up, and I'm even thinking when I picked it up for the first time, what the hell is this crap? You know, this is going to be, oh, man, it's just another kid's thing. They're trying to, like, lower the bar again, this and that. But then I actually read the first issue, and my jaw dropped. This was really good stuff. And the art was superb. Because, again, it's Mark Bagley. It's bound to be good. And the writing just, it felt true. It felt like I was reading a story about somebody who was, you know, beginning his career that year. You know, it felt like the year 2000 to me. It didn't feel like 87 with a couple of like new references to 2000. Like this felt like a kid I could just like run into the street and hang out with, you know? And even now I still pick it up because it's still an engaging story to me. I mean, it's still like something that I just month after month am enjoying. And I know that eventually he will grow up because you actually age in the Ultimate Universe from the looks of things. Not as fast as you would in, say, like the real world, but he's gone up a grade. You know, he's definitely aging a little bit, and they will get to that college point. And the question is, what do you do then? Do you lose your audience because you're losing that, like, young book? Or do you get the people like me who have been reading it from the beginning and are just glad to see him evolve as a character? It'll be an interesting point when they get to that point, if they do.
That's definitely what's holding me back with Spider-Girl right now.
Right.
And I hate to say it because, of course, I was like, female Spider-Man, and it's his daughter without wrecking, you know, that whole kind of, oh, another Spider-Woman.
Yeah.
And it, for me, that's kind of an example where it got kind of bland for me personally.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just him in high school dealing with the same crap, or her, sorry, her and him.
Yeah.
Awesome. Dealing with the same thing over and over again. And I think Ultimate is kind of the perfect example of how to do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I've been picking up Spider-Girl since the first What If that came out where she was first introduced. And I get it delivered to my house because I have been doing the subscription service with Spider-Girl since issue 20, when my original comic shop, the only one that I could really get to at the time, stopped picking it up. And I didn't know about DCBS then because there wasn't one then. So I just stuck with the subscription service. And I'm realizing I have about 5 months, 6 months of Spider-Girl to read. I'm just not as interested in the book as I used to be. It's just, eventually I'll read it, sure, but it's not nearly as fun as it used to be. But Ultimate Spider-Man's still fun to me.
See, I think the problem with Spider-Girl right now is because of all the times they keep threatening to shut it down.
Yeah.
I think they never really had a chance to make any long-range plans. You know, they always have, you know, it's, oh my God, we're going to get shut down, so we got to have to finish up the story or try to bring in new readers. And I think now that maybe it's got a kind of a stable home, maybe they can start planning things more where she's going to graduate from high school and move on.
Yeah.
I see that happening. The same thing in Ultimates. I think Peter is going to get older, and they're going to do just like what they did in Amazing. They're going to bring the readers along with them. People do not want to see the same things over and over again. Jen's perfect example. She's getting tired of Spider-Girl because it's the same thing over and over again, high school.
Yeah.
Well, now that maybe with a little luck, they'll start bringing her along, and suddenly she'll get that. She'll be filling out high college applications, and then she's going to be moving on, and you'll get the different subject matter, more mature subject matter. But they'll still bring you slowly enough where you won't lose you. It won't be such a dramatic change.
Yeah.
What really lost it for me with Spider-Girl, though, aside from the high school stuff, was we're 114 issues, regardless of the reboot, because that was stupid.
Yeah.
And she still doesn't even know who the hell Ben Reilly was.
I know. Yeah.
The hell had her costume before her.
Yeah. And this is still the only continuity to me that feels like it's actually a continuation of the 90s.
Dark Devil is his freaking son.
Uh-huh.
And we don't know this yet, in that we do in the mini. There's been absolutely no reference to that fact.
And does she even know yet that Kane was a Peter Parker clone?
No, that's what I'm talking about. There's been no reference to that stuff. And honestly, they lose me like right there almost instantly.
Aside, oh, yeah.
It's been going on lately.
Yeah.
Like, I was mad.
Well, you realize at around where she is now in Amazing, Peter had already lost Gwen. I mean, he's already had been in college for a couple of years, and he's already had this major death. His character's changed so much. She hasn't got to that point.
We're getting there, though. We're getting there. We're getting there, because the one issue that I read recently was a huge, 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 huge turning point for her. And
brother?
Yeah. That's going to be big.
She's finally got the tragedy. It's about time, because I'm sick of, oh, you're not allowed to be Spider-Girl. Oh, but I'm going to sneak out and be Spider-Girl. Oh, but you're not allowed. Okay, we're okay with it. Like, and now we're not. It just went back and forth for 100 issues and drove me insane.
Yeah. I came close. Like, when I saw that issue, when I read that issue, I was emotional. That was damn. Because I'd never seen them go there before with Spider-Girl.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah. Like I said, hopefully it's a new start. Now that it's got some security, maybe they'll start to move her along.
Yeah, hopefully. Brent, you got any comments on the previous comments? Jay's stuff?
It was a good comment. You guys pretty much covered everything.
Okay. You want to read the next Chris one? Because that's nice and short. Equinox.
This is from Chris Chavez, Equinox. To me, the late 70s and early 80s run of Marvel Team-Up, especially with Chris Claremont at the helm, was a perfect Spider-Man book. Peter was a single swinging guy, just the way Joe Q likes him, who had confidence in his abilities but still wasn't getting the full respect of the Marvel U around him. By putting him together with some of the great heroes and villains of the time, Marvel Team-Up really built the believability of New York and how it fit into the continuity while also presenting both the heroic and personal development of Spidey. Plus, a little John Byrne art on the book never hurts things either.
Yes. However, let's pretend that Spider-Man Chapter 1 never happened. That was bad.
Agreed.
That's the type of John Byrne art that I just want to take out of my mind entirely. Come on. Doc Ock being in the same place as Spider-Man when Spider-Man got his powers, that's not necessary.
Ultimate Spider-Man happened that way?
Yes, but Ultimate Spider-Man wasn't a retcon. That was just forced when they did it in the regular universe.
All right.
Yeah. That was also at the same time when Spider-Girl that was actually Spider-Man, but was Spider-Girl, but Spider-Man showed up. That's Maddie, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think she's the fourth one? Third one?
No, she's the... Let's see. She's either third or fourth. There's been four,
Drew,
but she's...
Carpenter, and somebody else, and Maddie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was... Isn't she, like, related to JJ, too?
I'm not sure if she's related, but I noted that she was staying with them for a while.
Yeah, I think she might be related to his wife, actually. I'm not positive about that.
You know what, I think it's actually his stepdaughter.
Yeah.
Yeah. But plenty of stuff on there, and, you know, the 80s and 70s and all that. I haven't read any Marvel Team-Up. I should probably do that eventually.
Oh, those are great stuff.
Let's talk a little bit more about the movies and, the evolution of the character via that. We've had better animated series, in my opinion, you know, in the 90s than we ever did, and except for Spider-Man Unlimited, obviously. But the movies have changed things a lot. Spider-Man is in the public eye again. Was this a benefit to the Spider-Man comic book, or does the comic book suffer because it's forced to follow what the movie does? And I know we've touched a little bit on this before, but let's try to go a little bit more in depth on this, and we'll start with Brent.
It's probably a benefit. I mean, they cashed in on the black suit this past summer. I'm sorry to say, it was not in the plans as bullshit.
Yeah.
They cashed in big time.
Oh, yeah.
Totally.
Because cashing in means that you put it in all the titles, which they did. And, you know, in the plans would have meant he was just in black and amazing to me. So, you know, I guess it is a benefit that they do try and cash in. I don't know if it helped anything or not. Because we still don't have people given that, you know, the books away or anything. When I went to the movie theater, the comic shop from, like, across town was there. And they're giving away Ultimate X-Men, not Ultimate Spider-Man. So that was kind of weird.
What the hell?
They just had, like, I guess they just had a whole bunch of random issues. Like, they had, like, two issues that they had a whole bunch of Ultimate X-Men there. Like, let's give these away.
When they give away Howard the Duck, I mean, that would have made more sense, right?
Yeah, really. Or Spawn or something like that. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, that's...
So I guess it does help.
Yeah.
But it is kind of weird, though, how, like, the second and the third film, Peter and MJ get closer, and then as they get closer, they try and break him apart in the comics, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're moving it towards marriage in the movies, and that in the comics, they're breaking apart.
Yeah. And I gotta say, if they were divorcing Peter, I'd be so much happier with what's been going on. Because
it's not a retcon.
Right, right. Because they're going to take all that character growth away, which is just stupid to me, at least. I mean, I know you can't do divorce in comics, but you know what? You should be able to do divorce in comics because it happens in real life.
Didn't
They're divorced, and I mean, they're both
the
characters.
Only
so.
Couple that have.
Ray Palmer and his wife in
true.
DC did that.
Yeah. Oh.
If they're going to retcon it and just do away with everything, then that means they're pretty much – I don't know how it's going to work exactly, but it seems like they might as well just put him in a time loop and send him back to where he was 16 and just let Amazing Spider-Man retell that story. Oh, but wait, we have Ultimate Spider-Man that does that.
Yes, but and remember how successful it was when all of a sudden Iron Man was a kid.
What?
You missed this, Jen?
I think I have.
She didn't miss anything. That's what that was.
Once upon a time, around the time that Onslaught happened, Iron Man from an alternate timeline ended up in the Marvel U. And he was a kid. He was a teenage Iron Man inside of the Iron Man suit. But he didn't let anybody know he was a teenage kid, because if they did, they'd be like, what the hell are you doing and where the hell is Tony Stark? And then when Heroes Were Born happened, surprisingly enough, he was fully grown in that universe. Big shock.
Right. Ta-da.
Yep. Magic. It's absolute magic.
Steroids.
Yeah.
Anytime you see something you can't explain, magic elf.
Of course. Yeah. Or of course, as I like to call it, a Superman Prime punch.
Let's not go there.
All right, yeah, that's a different universe. Jen, let's go. Let's throw it over to you.
I see a benefit as a consumer because you're getting more public knowledge of the character, and sometimes it's nice to have someone else to talk to you about this crap with.
Yeah.
But the fan in me says no, because that means we have merchandise of a completely different style forced down our throats. We have, you know, T-shirts popping up that's Spider-Man related. But, you know, it's a movie Spider-Man instead of the comic Spider-Man, which is kind of what I run into, because I like, you know, I want comic Spider-Man. I don't want shiny webbing, badly styled costume. It's the changes they made. It's not something that I want to be known as the main background and style. I want the comics to be popular for being comics.
Right.
And the lore that created the character. But that's just a fangirl point of view, of course.
Well, it's not even that, though, because when you think about it, there are a bunch of people out there that know the character from the movies that still have never read a Spider-Man comic.
Oh, I ran into someone like that the other day. So I was talking to some person, and she brought her grandson around, and he was wearing a Spider-Man shirt. And grandmother goes, oh, he's a big Spider-Man fan. And he's all like, yeah. And we start talking, and he's all, grandmother pointing his shirt, is that Spider-Man on your shirt, isn't it? And she goes, no, it's Venom, the kid. I go, oh, cool, you know Venom. He goes, yeah. And I says, yeah, I love the Spider-Man comics. And he just looked at me like I had a third head. You know, like, you know what? Comic books? He knew the movies. But he did not know a thing about the comic books. To answer your question about the thing, I think the movies are great. They bring more attention to the character, but for the comics, it does no good. I mean, I don't think it's detrimental. I don't mind they do little things, you know, like, okay, let's have Back in Black because we got Spider-Man in the black costume in the movies. So let's bring it back in the comic books. No big deal. If you look at it this way, I mean, how often do they come out with Spider-Man movies? You know, they're only on their third movie in how many years? They don't. It's something I'll tolerate because it does bring more attention to the character. And I think more attention to character is, in the long run, is good.
Yeah.
But it doesn't hurt. It doesn't help the comics at all, really.
Yeah. I know times have changed because when the Superman comics, excuse me, when the Superman movies came out, I know that it actually boosted the comics a lot. You didn't have stuff like video games. That now you have, obviously, you have Spider-Man movie video games coming out. And I think more kids would go and play the video game of the movie than read the comic book, which has nothing to do with the movie.
But that's the kind of thing I mean, though, where I don't want to play the movie game. I want to play the comic game with those characters as they appeared in the comics. And that's why we were always screaming about the N64 game being so much better than much everything that's come out in the last few years. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I played it on PlayStation, and it was great.
Oh, so good. Honestly, it's just like the pie from Spider-Man 3. So good.
Yeah, and of course, I got a little geek out with Carnage Doc Ock.
Yeah, no kidding, eh?
That was great.
I just like that everybody was in that game.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And you had all the alternate costumes in there.
Oh, yeah.
It could be Scarlet Spidey and Spidey 2099 and stuff like that.
They had unlimited.
I played that on the PC. They had that too, didn't they?
Yes, they did, unfortunately.
I'm trying to think. Was that the game with the Spider-Man bowling, or was that the Spider-Man movie game?
Definitely not that game.
Okay.
Not the first one.
All right, you know what? Then it was the Spider-Man movie game, because I remember that my favorite feature in the Spider-Man movie game was that you got to do bowling with Spider-Man. He would swing down the aisle and knock the pins down. And you got to choose between all the outfits for that, including the Alex Ross rejected movie costume.
Yeah, that looks exactly like the Captain America costume that he designed.
Oh, yeah. As we went in depth on in episode 51. But, yeah, it was pretty fun. It's literally like you finally get to play a game with Spidey that you probably have been wanting to play since you saw that he could, like, web.
What's the best Spider-Man game, you think?
Ooh, that's a good question, actually, and actually one that I was going to ask, so thank you, Brad. Yeah, because there have been a bunch. I mean, there's been a bunch ever since, like, the Atari, pretty much. I mean, and you've had, like, the Sega Genesis games, you've had the Maximum Carnage, and I remember the Spider-Man X-Men game. And
oh, that was so bad. I had to trade that one in so fast.
Yeah. I mean,
the Spider-Man Carnage one, that one was terrible, because it was like Double Dragon, but with Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I don't think you could wall crawl or anything in that one as a brawler.
Yeah. And there was never a arcade Spider-Man game, surprisingly enough. There was an arcade Avengers game and an arcade X-Men game, but never a arcade Spider-Man game, I guess because he's just one person. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite Spider-Man game, video game, of all time? And we'll ask Jen first.
Wow, I have to go with the N64 game with Ultimate a close behind. And that's, a lot of people are going to say, what about Spider-Man 2? And it's only because I haven't played it yet that I can't really comment.
Yeah.
N64, I know we touched on already, it had the characters, it had comic storylines, it had new storylines with old characters, you know, like you say, Monster Rock.
Yeah.
And the costumes, that was the first time that we saw such an array of costumes in it.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, like, because I wasn't really into the hype or realized that there were internet communities for these things back then, so I was going, oh my god, Scarlet Spider, you know, and swinging around with the different powers and quick change and all that.
Bagman.
Yes. Yes. Was he in that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Wow. He was a secret character.
Uh-huh.
Jeez.
Yeah, they had Bagman, and like I cracked up the minute I saw that. I'm like, yeah, there's nothing quite like a Spider-Man outfit, which consists of a Fantastic Four outfit and a freaking paper bag on his head.
And not
and don't
only
forget
this,
the kick me sign.
Oh, yes, and the kick me sign.
Yeah. But that game was also a huge jump ahead at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Graphics. And that's something that gets looked over a lot because it's always fans. Like, it's a great game, but it honestly was a huge jump ahead at the time for N64.
Yeah.
And my second would have to be Ultimate because the web swinging physics in that, phenomenal.
Oh, yeah.
Absolute. Like, my stomach, honest to God, when I'm playing it on even a small screen, my stomach's actually doing the dive because you're doing those big jumps off the Baxter Building and stuff.
Yeah.
Incredible sandbox.
Wonderful voice acting in that, too.
It's true.
Yeah. And actually, I think one of my favorite fights, though, still has to be the Wolverine versus Venom.
Oh, yeah.
Which they just threw in there for the hell of it. It's like, we're a Marvel title. We need to have Wolverine in it somehow because he's in everything.
And you're Venom.
Uh-huh. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
To eat people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but actually, my favorite will be Ultimate, because I have played the first Spider-Man one. That is great, and I love that ending with the poker game and jail and all that. Captain America and tying it into the animated series almost with the Captain America visit. I think that Ultimate did the job of making it feel like it was a comic book come to life. That this was the comic book I had been reading since issue one in video game form, and it just did a wonderful job of that, and it's... I still play it today. I mean, I bought it like a year ago, and I still play it.
Who wouldn't want to be a live-action Bagley piece of art?
Of course.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah. Man, that was just wonderful. Chris, what's your favorite?
I like the Spider-Man one, too, but I played it on the computer.
Uh-huh.
So well, I love that game, though. It was fun because, I love playing as Bagman. You had Peter Parker. You could play as him where he was just in his leather jacket and stuff like that. And you had all the different costumes. You had the Scarlet Spider. It was just that was just so much fun playing in all the different costumes and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
And I did play as Bagman for most of the game. I conquered it at regular Spider-Man, and then I got the cheat codes and found how to do Bagman and played Bagman.
It's the best code ever to unlock everything. It's Eelnats.
I didn't even... Oh, my God.
Eelnats. Stanley backwards.
That's genius.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, you know. And, you know, again, it was a lot of the missions. And I don't know how it was on the N64, but in the computer, it was like there was bank robberies. And you fought against people like Scorpion and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was
Jonah towering behind a desk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they had the same guy who played Spider-Man in Spider-Man Unlimited actually voiced.
Yeah, Reno Romano. We had a whole spew about that guy.
Yes, and mm-hmm. and the minute that you mentioned Extreme Ghostbusters, I'm like, somebody
yes!
else remembers it.
Yes, that was my favorite show. So bad. Okay, okay.
I remember that show.
Sweet.
So good.
with the emo hair and all that.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna eat off my face.
Yeah. Yeah, and that episode where the original Ghostbusters came back was great.
Yes, it was classic. Anyway.
Yeah. Good times, good times. Brent, what's your favorite?
I've really played through like three of them. The first one on the PC, just like Chris played it, you fell down into the fog, basically, that game.
Yeah.
I love that game. I think I played that like three times through on the PC and stuff, just everything about it. And really, that probably has to be my favorite. Because anything else now is just a derivative of that game.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they had the spider aiming system where you could web the guys. You know, they had the web ball and the web gloves and stuff like that, which is pretty standard in all the movie games and, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man. I mean, the first movie game I did like, though, because it had, like, the combo system and stuff, and you can do a whole bunch of different moves.
I could never get past the third Goblin level. I tried. I can never get freaking past that. When you try to get into like Osborn Labs,
I'm kind of stuck at the first level still in the first movie game. So
ouch.
You're definitely killing me in that. So I feel so bad.
Yeah.
Guitar Hero is my thing. I'm sorry.
But I will say that the Ultimate game is a close second. I bought that for the PC like last year and played it, and I'm probably going to play it again over Christmas break just because it was so fun.
Yeah. The Rhino fight's a lot of fun in that, actually.
Mm.
That's great.
Did anybody play the sequel to the N64 game, the Electro one?
Nah, I skipped it. I heard mixed reviews, and I actually didn't want to ruin the experience I had in the first one with a
subpar game. If that came out for the PC because I didn't have a console,
it
I still
only
don't.
Came
I would have got
PS,
that. And yeah.
It was
like, off eBay.
Yeah. I heard that it was okay, but it's just not nearly as good as the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not missing much. All right, I think that's almost everything that we went through. I mean, yeah. I'm trying to think whether or not there's anything else I want to mention here. Yeah, you know what? Actually, we'll end it off with something nice and simple. Where would you like to see Spider-Man go in the future? And obviously, with Brand New Day, there's going to be a bunch of changes. But where do you want to see the character of Spider-Man go in the upcoming years? And we'll start with Brent on this one.
I want to see him get married.
Wait a minute. Wait, hold on. He is. Oh, wait, but he's not going to be. So you want to see him
get
remarried to the same person?
I want to see him undo the undo. So we'll call that the redo.
So, or as I like to call it, do what Flash did. I still hate that. I'm sorry. The whole thing where Spectre took away everybody remembering who Wally West was. Linda had no idea that he was the Flash. That just annoyed the crap out of me. That's pretty much what they're doing here. But anything else you want to see happen?
I'm really interested in what the One More Day stuff is going to be. I really want them to stay on schedule once they start that. Not the One More Day, the Brand New Day or whatever.
Brand New Day.
When it comes out three times a month, I want them to stay on schedule. I hope that, you know, Joe Quesada gives them a whole bunch of time to fix whatever the fuck they're doing.
Yeah.
Well, apparently, there's a lot of people already done their freaking books, like already done their pencils for that arc. I forget who it was specifically I heard, but we were all kind of going, holy crap.
It's. I know that LaRocca's done, because he's posted a bunch of stuff about it, and I know that Bakalo is very close to done.
So hopefully this is a sign of things to come.
Oh, yeah.
Well, this is going to get ridiculous.
Let me add on to that, that I want to see those guys come back and do a second arc. I don't want it to be a constantly rotating, you know, McNiven does one, and then he'll never come back again. Right, I want, like, you know, McNiven, Bakalo, Jimenez, and LaRocca, and then I want another McNiven, Bakalo, Jimenez, whatever. I want them to go on for years and then throw in the JRJR stuff in there.
Hey,
I don't want them to go off on another title after they do an arc. I don't want this to be the new Avengers book, you know, where before Civil War you had a new artist each arc.
Uh-huh. Actually, it's funny because I was the guy who was poo-pooing the Bakalo stuff at first because I'm like, which of these doesn't belong? You know, McNiven, Jimenez, LaRocca, you know, JRJR and Chris Bakalo.
Chris Ramos.
Yeah. But wait, Ramos is doing stuff also?
No, I was being sarcastic.
I would love to see him return. Oh, okay. Humberto Ramos.
Yeah.
But I
love his stuff.
I will thank you, somebody else, because I was one of those people that hated his guts, and then I got really warmed up to him during his little X-Men run.
Have you read Impulse, Jen?
No, I have not.
Okay, it's still available. See if you can pick up that trade that they did of the first Impulse run, where they actually trade together the issues of Flash where Impulse is first introduced and the first issues of his comic. And that is – you'll see what Ramos used to look like. You'll see what drew people to him in the first place, because that's just wonderful stuff and very youthful.
I like his current stuff.
Oh, so
I like
I,
Wolverine
I, yeah.
and the Jenkins stuff. The Jenkins stuff, I think it was the – not the Peter Parker stuff – which is pretty much the same, but
yeah.
I picked up his Spider-Man with was that Spectacular when Venom came back and lost his costume because he had cancer or something like that.
I like everything.
And then Doc Ock returned in a black leather Matrix jacket.
I love everything except that, because that was just stupid.
Yeah,
he drew he drew like a gorgeous MJ and Pete, though. Like, they just look so modern.
Yeah,
and I really love that about that spec run.
What I was gonna say about Bakula though is that, from the like promos that they've done so far of his art, it looks a lot like Ramos. It looks a lot like it. And usually his stuff is much more looser than Ramos.
I totally got them mixed up a couple times, and I didn't realize they were so similar until I was looking.
Them switching off back and forth on X-Men doesn't help.
That's exactly it. That's exactly where I saw them both. So.
Yeah,
but honestly, because people tend to like Bakalo a lot more than Ramos, so I was really shocked when I was taking a look at him, and I actually thought Bakalo's stuff was Ramos.
I'm a firm believer that Chris Bakalo has to be rushed every single time, because he, and I've said this a couple of times before on the show, but every single time he's rushed, he puts out better stuff. He overthinks his art, and then it gets all like weird. You know, then he starts going for the crazy angles and like the funny faces and awkward poses. And when he's rushed, he just draws comics. That's what he needs to do. They need to give him a really tight deadline on Spider-Man, and he'll draw great. Which is not happening right now, obviously, thanks to Quesada.
Yes.
Yeah. Chris, so what do you want to see in the future?
I think I want to see the character getting being a little bit more lighthearted. I missed that, the humor aspect of the book. I mean, Peter David did a great job of reintroducing a lot of that, but they took it away from him too quickly. Mm-hmm. He started off in the middle of an event, and he never got a chance to really get into the meat of the character, I think. I like that. I like the little quips. I like the little humor that's just thrown in there just to be funny, you know, and that's what I want to see in the future for Spider-Man. I want to see him still be married. I'm hoping this is going to be like another typical Marvel thing where, okay, they're going to take the marriage away. We're going to go, you know, 6 months to a year with him not being married, and then something's going to happen, and it's going to go back to where it belongs.
Yeah.
I really don't wish they ever got to that point. I want him to stay married. I don't want to see him being divorced, separated, or annulled, or forgotten, whatever.
Right.
But yeah, if I had one thing to choose from, I want them to bring back the humor in the book.
No question.
Because that really separated Spider-Man from all the other comics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that's present there in Ultimate, but it hasn't been in the regular titles other than, like, New Avengers in a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like we said, it was great seeing in the New Avengers, and Peter David, like I said, little things you throw in there just makes you giggle. You're like, see that? Look at that.
Hey, well, no, Peter David's Friendly Neighborhood was probably the best Spider-Man I've read in forever. You know, like a consistent Spider-Man book that felt like Spider-Man and not like Bat Spidey.
Yeah. We were commenting about this on Amazing Spider-Cast in episode 50 about there was a scene in Amazing where Peter rips off some poor guy coming out of McDonald's because he has no money and he doesn't can't go down, he's starving. Little things that there was no need for that in that book, but it was funny and it worked and it was great and it just fit the character and stuff like that I miss.
Right. And I mean, also, Peter David knew how to even make the stuff after his identity was revealed fun.
Yeah.
You know, like especially like when he came to work as a teacher, that was just wonderful. And I know we didn't mention much about the identity reveal, but I think that's kind of because we know it's going to be reset probably with Brand New Day.
It has been already, actually. Did you read Initiative 7?
Yeah, Avengers Initiative, yeah.
Well, that's just put it into doubt. It hasn't quite fixed it yet.
Well, that makes it easier for them to do it because they can just go read Avengers Initiative number 7.
Right.
Which I love that book, by the way.
Yeah.
Me too.
Love that book.
Yeah.
Drama, I love you. Don't be emo. I'll hug you.
All right. So other than the return of Ben Reilly's Scarlet Spider, what else do you want, Jen?
Oh, yes. Okay, so we're past the whole wham, marriage is broken up. I want to see them make it worth it. Sell it to me. Give me arcs that aren't written for trades. Give me, you know, like storylines that can be contained within one. Have that supporting cast that Peter David worked so hard to reestablish that you took out from under him.
Yeah.
I want to see Jackpot actually be MJ. Don't fake this out on me. And
it's going to be Aunt May really, really young.
It's Black Cat with a wig.
Yeah, we joke, but you never know.
I hate to say, though, I think you're going to be disappointed because the way they've got the new book set up with all the different writers and all having all their little sections done, it really looks to me like it's going to be all trade. It's going to be like, it's going to be very choppy, very sections by sections.
I hope.
How's it going to work, though? Because it looks like they're only doing 3 issues in arc, which I would welcome because, you know, we're going to get hopefully more bang for our buck. We don't have to sit through a dragged out story or anything like that, but kind of wondering what it's going to be like with, you know, 3 issues per arc and then you switch over to a new writer and a new artist.
Yeah, especially the fact that they're getting things done in advance. It might be like, it's going to be like just completely like 3 different stories. No connection between the two.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm afraid of.
I hope that's not the case, though, because with you know what, actually with the editor that they have, with Steve Walker on the case, I think that we're going to hopefully get some good stuff because, you know, he did 52. He knows how to put things together.
Yeah.
That's thankfully an opinion I'm hearing in multiple places. So I'm hoping to God that's exactly the way it works out.
Yeah. None of that 90s stuff all over again. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. I also want to see it like has been said before. I want to see the humor back because I've actually gone running to other characters for that humor. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even notice I was doing it.
Deadpool.
Exactly. Yeah.
Blue Beetle.
Oh, yeah.
Blue Beetle.
Yeah.
Well, Deadpool is exactly it. Like, I wondered why I was getting so heavily into that character all of a sudden. Reading back the old Spidey recently, I'm like, holy crap, that's totally why I've run to that, because he's not doing it anymore.
Oh, I recently read on Scans Daily on LiveJournal, I don't know if you'd be able to pick this up, but the Superman-Batman annual that came out at the end of Jeff Loeb's run, they had a moment where the Earth 3 Deathstroke shows up, and it's pretty much Deadpool.
It's Deadpool, yeah. That's where I saw it.
Yeah, because Joe Kelly actually wrote that, I think.
And then they kept cutting him off, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, what's your name? My name is Deadpool.
if this was about a month ago before we heard all the crappy news about Bags running to DC, I'd be all about, I want to see Bagley back on Amazing.
Of course, yeah.
But I'll take Junior, no problem.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see a solid team on this. I'm not a fan of rotating teams at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'll give these people a try, obviously, because some of them are superstars. But, you know, I want the solid team there that's going to be there for good. For good in the Marvel U anyway.
What I want to see in the future, I actually want to see a couple things. Number one, I want Peter back at the Daily Bugle. All right?
Yes.
I was a fan of him as a teacher. I really liked that concept. Peter David pulled it off great. But from the looks of things, they're getting rid of that. So he better be back at the Bugle where he belongs. Because it's just you lose so much of the bullpen feel without him being at the Bugle. And I know he's getting a new supporting cast, is apparently going to be based at the Bugle, but don't forget the old guys, too. You know, don't forget Betty Brant. Don't forget any of, like Robbie and Jonah and all that. And also, I forget her name. What's the
Glory. Glory Grant.
Yeah, Glory Grant. You want to get it confused? Betty Brant, Glory Grant. You know, it's like
BBGG.
Right. But yeah, Glory Grant was a great character from when I read her and from when I saw her also. She was in the animated a little bit. And
yeah,
it just, we're missing so much of that. So give him the supporting cast back. If you're going to make him date, have him date new people. All right. I don't want to see Gwen Stacy clone showing up. All right. I want him to date people with interesting personalities, ones that mesh up with him and aren't just Mary Jane spit out again or Gwen Stacy spit out again.
I think that was a huge, huge part of why people liked Ben too when he popped in on the scene, because he was dating like three people at once.
No question. Yeah, and one of them was Spider Woman. Yeah, one of them was Jessica Drew, right?
Wow, I didn't even know that.
Yeah, actually, if you go back, she hung out at the
Daily Grind.
Yeah, Daily Grind all the time.
Jeez.
Yep. Along with that, I don't know, just give me some growth. Give me some character growth. Don't make him feel like you're just like bringing him back to the 60s or 70s all over again. You know, give me a reason to care. Give me some fun, youthful Spidey while still advancing the character, and you'll have a happy Ian on your hands. And I like a happy Ian. He's a lot less broody than a sad Ian. So just make that happen, all right, guys? Thank you. Thank you very much. So at that point, I guess we're going to wrap things up here. Wonderful panel. Absolutely wonderful panel. You guys are plenty of fun. And Chris, come on, man. You got to come back more often, buddy. I mean, it's been it's been freaking forever, man. And
I haven't gone anywhere, man. I've been here.
I know. Well, whenever you find anything that's, you know, of interest to you, just, you know, shoot me a PM, man. And the panel's always open. So whenever you want to come on back, buddy, we're good to have you. You have anything to promote that you want to plug on the show or anything?
Well, let's see. I do this podcast. No. I'm the only person on the forums that doesn't have a podcast, so let's just leave it
at
that.
He's calling me on ours.
I'm everybody's special guest, let's put it that way. I do bar mitzvahs, I weddings, you know.
Try the veal.
Do you make veal?
Yes, try the veal.
There you go.
And this podcast that Chris is on regularly, Jen, you wouldn't know anything about that, would you?
Well, Chris can sometimes be found at the Amazing Spidercast.
Oh, okay, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, whenever Jen's out of town, I'm the back. I'm their Joan Rivers to their
He's
Jay Leno.
He's got my back, yo.
What up?
But yeah, he joined us for our part of our episode 50 fiasco. That made it out of
the marathon.
Hey, I'm familiar with episode 50 marathons, so trust me, I feel your pain.
Excellent. Oh man, quite the fiasco.
Yeah, but you guys did the Clone Saga on that, right?
Yes, we actually just got. Well, we're currently in the middle of doing the Clone Saga, which is a 4-episode extravaganza. We've already done the Ultimate way back, but we just did the 70s Clone Saga. We're doing 2 episodes of the 90s Clone Saga. And then we're going to have everybody back, including Mr. Gallo, to talk and compare them all together. And then we're going to have a big hangover episode where we're just going to chill.
Sweet. And you guys just made a switch over to Libsyn, right?
We did. And that, yeah, so that's Amazing Spidercast at, .libsyn.com. Because, okay. Yeah, we had a big fiasco with that. We're going to be changing our iTunes over soon. But if you go onto our forum, also on the comic forums, then you can find all that info.
That's theamazingspidercast.libsyn.com, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, just making sure, because I don't want to like go amazingspidercast.libsyn.com and find something else. So, okay, cool. Yay.
Thanks for having me, man. Thanks for having both.
No, good to have you. Good to have you on. And the same thing I said to Chris goes out to you, Jim. Whenever you feel like popping in, it's good to have return guests. So you're always welcome.
Yeah, Thursdays at 10. Just invite yourself.
Yeah. Seriously, though, that has happened. So, like, I mean, if you're on it Thursday at 10 and have nothing to do, just stop on by.
Will do.
Okay. And Brent, what's up coming on BK's Bullets?
I'm still waiting on the Smallville one to be released.
That's why I like to ask.
Hopefully, by the time this is out, that'll be out. And after that, I still got Emperor Joker, which I've been advertising for like 2 months now. So I probably should reread that thing before I record that sucker, eh?
See, I thought, oh my god, was that A directed towards Jen? I'm just asking here, all right?
No, what do you mean A directed towards Jen?
Never mind.
What do you mean?
What do you mean, eh? What are you talking about, eh?
No, I'm just saying.
Okay, I'm sorry. I've just never heard you say A.
Oh.
Usually it pops out, but I stop myself.
I was doing a gym thing from Raging Bullets, you know, A.
Oh, okay, yeah. How's it going, A?
Yeah. A.
Okay, cool.
Just being a jerk.
Yeah, that was a good issue, eh? You enjoy it? That arc, eh? Yeah.
It's all
a boot, the black costume.
You from Canada or something?
How'd you guess, Brent?
I really was guessing.
Yeah, you'll find that Brent actually has not listened to that much Amazing Spider-Cast, but he's going to change that, right, Brent?
Damn you!
Oh, come on! I have to
know your secret. I stopped listening when I had to reboot my computer and redo the hard drive and lost all the podcasts I was listening to. So yeah, now I have to go back and listen.
All good. You know how many podcasts are out there right now? I know how it goes.
Yeah, way too many.
Seriously, I've lost my hard drive a couple times too.
Now that you're on, maybe I'll really want to listen. Because you sound like fun.
Yeah. Although, yeah, it is a barrel of laughs whenever Jen's on, that much I can say. I'm actually a huge fan of the Spidercast. I'm glad I finally found it. Took me long enough. All right. So before we go here, I actually have a promo for Quiet Panelologists at Work, which is the hardest to say podcast out there, but they're a lot of fun. So actually, let me bring that up right here. And here we go.
The Quiet Panelologists at Work podcast, the true antidote to the average comic book podcast.
So, John, why should people listen to our podcast?
Well, Matt, for starters, it's only 45 minutes long.
That's true, so it's not actually that much of a burden on your free time.
No, and it's only bi-weekly.
Yeah, so you don't have to make a massive commitment to it.
We talk about comics.
That's right, and the joys of being a comic book collector.
Yeah, and we like to think we're pretty funny.
I like to think I'm quite funny.
I think you are funny in the head.
The Quiet Panelologists at Work podcast at panelologist.com.
All right, Quiet Panelologists at Work, check them out. I believe it's actually, like they said, quietpanelologistsatwork.com. It's a mouthful, but it's fun. It's good stuff, and especially if you like British accents.
I was going to say, those accents are amazing.
Yeah.
Makes everything sound classy.
Jolly good.
True. Pip, pip, cheerio.
Oh, yes. Pip, pip, cheerio, indeed. Oh, and I forgot to mention, ragingbullets.com for BK's Bullets, obviously. All right, so we're done here, so let's actually do the end here. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com/forum, which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geekspeak guys at comicgeekspeak.com, and you can find the Amazing Spidercast forum over there as well. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com, and we're also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasters. Check it out over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The link to the show notes are on the main page. And please send us a review on iTunes and dig us on dig.com. So for Brent, for Chris, and for Jen, I'm Ian Levesey, reminding everybody out there that there's always time for comics. And as Spidey would say, whip.
It's a good. You have it, give it to me, and he gives it to him, so he gets you under arrest. And this guy is screaming in the car, "See, it serves you right, serves you right!" And then he goes up to the kid in the car and he goes, "Okay, I need you to identify your pot. Can you identify it?" He goes, "Yeah, it's a half a bag, it's got a white stripe, it's this and that." "Okay, so this is your pot." He goes, "Yeah, you're under arrest also."
Oh,
they put him
God.
In the same car and drove him to the jail. Oh my God, he said it was the funniest drive over there. And one guy is just going, "You idiot! You stupid moron! You!" And calling him every name in the book.
Congratulations, you have officially failed the retard test.
My friend could, he said, he got out, after he dropped him off, he couldn't wait to call me. He was like laughing and laughing. He just couldn't believe this guy was that stupid.
Yeah, I have something to announce. I'm a Skrull. I actually replaced Ian a couple years back.
Keep that chin away. Sorry.
I'm Scarlet Ian.
Oh, God.
I'm a dude.
Does that mean you're the real one, but not really?
Yes, that's why we don't have any more Geek Speak, Brent, because this one only tuned into Comic Timing, so I had no idea there even was a Geek Speak.
It's a good excuse, Skrull Man. Good excuse.
Skrull Man. Yeah, but my favorite Skrull, and this is a complete side story, I know, but my favorite Skrull continues to be the Skrull that was in the Wisdom miniseries, the one that's that likes dressing as John Lennon.
Now you got me on that one.
Should I be thankful I don't know anything about this?
Yeah, there's a Skrull that was part of the, I guess literally the Skrull British invasion. They had a plan back in the day to replace the Beatles and take over the world. And this is the only one that decided to still dress up like John Lennon because he's just a beatnik.
So that's where Sergeant Pepper came from.
Mm-hmm. So they were all Skrulls.
Those outfits were just a little too colorful.
Oh, yeah. So remember that podcast we're doing, going back to that a little bit. I guess that's our conversation for the back in this episode. There's always one.
I think the visual image you get from that is a lot more different. This grammar sucks.
A lot more different, better than the where, the better. Girl, better who. But then you didn't have stuff like movies. You didn't have stuff like movies when the movies came out. Wow, that's crazy.
That's crazy talk.
Yeah.
Do you think we could get a Guitar Hero song for that Comic Timing epilogue? A song?
I'm Mr. Fix It.
Wouldn't that be fun? Red blue. red blue.
Power cord!
Well, bar.
I just realized how much typing actually sounds like Guitar Hero.
Hey, I actually have horrible, horrible footage of me in my dorm doing it to a song that's not on the game, but actually going meow, 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 whenever I play with the Whammy Bar.
Sweet.
It's the most embarrassing thing I've ever taken, but I don't regret a second of it.
Is it on YouTube?
No, hell no!
Put this shit on YouTube. Come on. Everybody's got to be at least a internet fool once in their lives.
Oh, I was already in a music video. That was enough for me.
I have a... oh, really? You were?
Was it Whitesnake?
Hell no! I have the hair for it, but, you know, not quite.
Okay, so where is this music video, I must say?
It's a Salads video. I'm only up for a couple seconds, but they kept using my face for the crowd shots.
Nice.
And, we all went to Toronto and they're a band that I do the main fan site for, so they made sure that the guy plunked the camera right in front of me.
Oh, sweet.
And bad.
Yeah, send me a link at the end.
Yeah, sure, no problem.
Okay.
It's embarrassing as hell.
Did Chris just drop out?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Is he dumped for tonight or what? I don't know. Hold on.
I guess.
We'll see.
He's dumping.
Oh, well.
Who knows? One second here. Let's see. Yeah, and you know what? Now he's actually showing up as on, of all things.
Figures?
Yeah. All right. One second. And that's the answer to that question. Okay, he's trying to call me back, so I'm back in. Yeah, I'm glad that you know didn't happen until after we were done talking.
Thank God it happened afterwards.
I know, yeah, because that usually happens at least 3 or 4 times a Skype call.
Not recently.
Actually, did that happen on 50?
No.
Oh, okay.
This happened on Chris's, when Darren was gone, it was me and Bob and Chris, and as we were saying goodbye, we said goodbye, and suddenly I got hung up, and they're like, oh, that was weird, you know?
Yeah, goodbye, good.
And click.
I like for it to just end on good. That's it. You'd have to come back on just say the word bye.
Chris, Oh man, that movie episode that we did with Dave kept dropping out.
Oh god.
Nightmare.
I have to say that I used to record with Hot Report. And Brent can attest to this. We lost like 3 shows because of Hot Report.
Yep. God damn it.
Wow.
Yeah. And
the best JSA #1 episode ever.
Oh, I know. Oh,
was pure genius.
That was so good. And we were like nuts.
It was a year ago. We started at like 12:30.
Uh-huh.
Went to like 3:30 or whatever. It was amazing.
It was crazy. We were out of our fucking minds. It was great.
We're toked up on shrooms or something.
Tim, you didn't like that, right? You lost an episode, the famous mission episode. With you, Chris, and I think it was Dave, wasn't it?
Oh, man.
But
I try to block those ones out of my mind, but I didn't say that.
Do yourself a favor, Jen, and listen to one of my early episodes and compare the sound quality to now. It's night and day. It's totally freaking different. Because, again, what the iRiver does, I don't get Skype replied on the call. So I get my full, like, non-Skype microphone come in, and then I get all you guys.
We sound like shit.
This sounds like horrible, but I do none of that crap. It's all Chris that does everything pretty much. I just kind of show up and record.
Like, I figured, because that's what Brent does.
Exactly, that's what I was saying. That sounds like me.
Only one in the group is like that.
Seriously, like, I don't even know how he records it. Like, I got nothing.
He uses this magic box that, you know,
there's a thing called a computer. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Well, I'm working on our website. That's about the most work I think I've done for anything.